Get your fix with the Uncommon Cast RX, your cure for the Common Rider Show. Join us as we discuss the bravest of all the fighters, and those Heisei guys too. With burning justice in our souls, let's tear it up!
I'm Aleph, the thesis-seeking critic, Duat Red.
I'm Sono, the nostalgic critic, Duat Red.
Who remembers it so you don't have to.
No, it's not Nostalgia Critic, it's Nostalgic. Nostalgic.
Similar to, but legally distinct from. You'll hear from our lawyers.
Honey Flash!
And we think, therefore we are.
Yes.
Now join us here on Uncommon Cast RX as we take a critical eye to Kamen Rider Ghost. Will Takeru save himself and the Kamen Rider franchise in the 26, 25, something like that, days he has left on this blue planet? Find out how we think he's doing as we pass judgment on Ghost Episode 9, Towering, The Man of Devotion, and Ghost Episode 10, 15 Icons, Assembled.
I'm just going to make a note here in the beginning, doing what I do, that episodes 9 and 10, and also the Beethoven episode, which I believe was 6, were written by Nobuhiro Mori, not our lead, Takeru Fukuda. Mori wrote 6 episodes of O's, and also its net movies and novel. Co-wrote 3 episodes of Gaim with Urobuchi, one of which was the only episode of Gaim I actually enjoyed. Wrote that Kakaider episode all by himself. And he seems to have written most, if not all, of Gaim's movies and that one Drive Ghost crossover.
He wrote the Drive Ghost thing was actually
the
by Grasshopper someone involved in Ghost.
Yeah, he wrote the Grasshopper episode of O's, which I thought about making a note of, but I didn't know if it was something we needed to, but that is an arc of O's that I cite a lot. For reasons as I talk about O's. But he did write that one episode of Gaim that I don't hate, which was the team dance battle episode that gave minor amounts of character development to literally everyone else.
He wrote episode 11. That was like one of my favorite episodes of Gaim.
Is that the team dance episode?
It was like this one calls it the Rider Great Assembling, revealing the mystery of the forest. It was like one of the Christmas
episodes. That might be slightly before that, yeah. So he wrote the few, like, he wrote a couple not terrible episodes of Gaim and all of its movies. He wrote that soccer thing, apparently.
Now I'm curious about the soccer thing.
He did that all by himself. So I'm just trying to keep up with my duty of crediting proper writers the way I did in Drive, because I do think that's important, and also I don't want anyone looking that up and then calling me out on it. I am trying to be consistent.
Also, he wrote the Gaim Guide and that movies.
Yep, he's written all of Gaim's movies.
Yeah, it's the Baron one and the Knuckle one. I have no idea what happens in those.
I don't either, because I'm not watching them.
Yeah.
Putting that out there, putting him in his list of credits out there, so when we discuss him, people have some context for him.
Yeah.
That's a good plan.
It's always nice to know about these things.
Yeah, I mean, I was pretty adamant of keeping track of who was writing what in Drive, and I'd just like to be consistent with that.
We should also start tracking their directors, too, I think.
Probably.
That, especially since, like, in this show, they actually direct.
Direct?
And do things with the camera.
Yeah, so that's something I'll look into keeping track of in the future. That's not something I've paid much attention to in the past, but that is something we should probably keep an eye on.
Yeah.
So let's get into this.
Yes. Our discerning eye to what could be the macro message hidden in these episodes of Ghost.
Okay. So for episode 9, we're playing with this idea of what is the truth, and that real truth isn't always easy to determine or find. Because Sionji believes absolutely in what he thinks is true, or at least he seems to believe absolutely in what he thinks is true about Ryu, but that doesn't line up at all with Igarashi's truth. And Takeru knows one truth and Makoto knows another. And right now we as the audience aren't quite sure which one is real. I mean, of course, we want to believe that Takeru's truth, where Ryu isn't horribly evil, is the one that's real. But it's not the first truth we were introduced to, and we don't really know. There's a lot that's still a mystery right now, and we can't kind of determine it for ourselves. I mean, just as we're about to learn more details of Igarashi's truth, he's taken out of the episode, though he still seems to be alive, so he could come back and give us more information later. And if we learn in the next few episodes, we can start kind of comparing stories and piecing things together, but there's still, even then, maybe a lot of details we don't know, especially since Sage seems to have his own truth. I mean, obviously Sage knows things and has something of his own agenda, but we have this shot of him looking at the monolith at the end of 9, where he seems really concerned, like something really dire is about to happen. So I want to know what he's worried about and what his truth may be. One bit that really did stick with me in 9 was Makoto yelling at Takeru that he doesn't know what Makoto is dealing with or what they've been through. And Takeru openly admits, like, no, he doesn't know, but he wants to know and he wants to help. And it actually reminds me of this Kuga scene that I've seen floating around as a photo set lately of, Ichijo telling Godai that he can't understand how he feels. And Godai's like, well, no one can understand exactly how anyone else feels, but we should still try and help each other.
That wasn't actually Ichijo, but
everyone hates me, I'm gonna be a grongy.
Okay, I'm missing.
Well, no, I thought the same thing.
I'm misremembering the photo set
when I saw it too. Mm-hmm. So,
and I mean, everyone had the same haircut in the year 2000.
Yeah.
God.
So, the guy's back was to the camera, so it's an easy mistake to make.
Yeah,
but
I still can't believe
is great.
The point I'm trying to make is still there. Mm. It brought me back to that, and it's always nice to be reminded of Kuga.
Indeed.
There was a lot of stuff in these episodes that, like, just momentary, like, oh, hey, this reminds me of Kuga, like, When we get, like, weird camera effects on Aran, I was like, oh,
yeah,
oh, that's a nice callback to Dagoba. Nicely done. Respect.
For episode 10, I'm not sure if I can call it the message of the whole episode, but 10 has this heavy theme of the value of life and who lives have value to. You've got these interactions between Akari and Takeru, and then the interactions with them and Makoto that brought me back a good 15 years in my life to Magic Knight Ray Earth. And I'm going to need you two to indulge me for a minute, because this is something that stuck out to me as a kid that I haven't seen repeated ever. This is the closest I've ever come to seeing it repeated. One of the first major trials that the three main characters in this show have to face is they go to this magic spring where they have to get a certain metal to make their weapons out of. And they end up having to fight whoever is the most important to them. And the one with the fire magic fights her childhood pet. The one with the water magic fights her parents. The one with the wind magic, and this is something that's really kind of stuck with me all these years, she's the healer of the group, and she has to fight herself. And it's kind of glossed over in the manga, but the anime is able to take a little bit longer with it, as they explain why they're fighting who they're fighting. And Fu, the wind magic user, explains that if anything ever were to happen to her, if she were, like, to die while on this quest, her family would miss her, and they would be really upset, and they would suffer over it, and she doesn't want to put them through that. And this is really very clearly the same feeling that Akari is trying to get through to Takeru. She cares about him, and holy heck, isn't it great to have a girl in a show who can care about a guy without it being romantic?
Yeah, it really is.
Isn't that nice?
I really like Akari. I love the way they're writing her, and that she gets to be important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I still have some fears, but it's like, so far,
it's
not
so
anything.
So far, it can all go horribly wrong. We've still got 40 episodes, but
yeah.
They're doing really well so far. But, like, if something happened to Takeru, it would be really painful for her and for Onari and for all of his other friends. Like, it's already hard enough on them that he's died, and now she's afraid of him being gone for good because he's putting his life at risk this way. And, like, there's more value to a human life than just how a person feels about themselves. And, I mean, of course, how you feel about yourself is the most important, but it's also important to remember how you affect others and that you can have just as much value to them as you do to yourself.
Indeed.
And it was really nice to see that kind of come back, even if not in quite the same way where, like, Fu never really had any hesitation about it. She's like, well, this is why I'm fighting myself. This is why I'm the most important person to me, because I care about everyone else in my life and I don't want them to worry over me. Where Takeru kind of has to have this explained to him, but I like that this idea was coming back.
And good bunch of episodes, these two. I'm quite satisfied. Episode 9. I noticed, like, on top of all the things that Sono has already pointed out, loyalty, it seems like a huge recurring motif in this episode, which is, you know, makes sense since this one is about Benkei. Was it pronounced Benkei or whatever?
Benkei, yeah.
Yeah, the Benkei. Since it is about Benkei, so obviously anything dealing with Benkei would have the, like, loyalty. There's also, like, obviously the Javert's loyalty to whoever the spirit world royalty are, but also of Professor Igarashi's loyalty to his friend and their ideals, as well as Takeru's loyalty to his friendship with Makoto and Kanon, and Makoto's own loyalty to Kanon. And on the flip side, we have Sionji, who is loyal to nobody but himself, pretty much. And of course, this is the part where my knowledge comes through, then the Ganma himself, who is very obviously based on Guan Yu, who is also famous for loyalty and his sense of honor.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, and let's not forget
Guan Yu.
Yeah, and let's not forget Javert's namesake's own fierce loyalty to law and code. So, you know, loyalty serves as the driving force for many characters' actions, and it's being highlighted in this episode particular, which is quite gracefully done in an episode that is about Benkei. I don't know if there's a message to it necessarily, but it's nice. And episode 10, I don't really have as much to say. It's felt more like an extension of the sort of things that have been happening in the previous episodes.
Yeah,
so yeah, that's...
Oh, go on, I'm sorry.
No, that's my piece.
Well, you know, you mention all this, and I just get to thinking a little about how this is really one of the more literary Kamen Rider series. Like, it is dense with, you know, you have, if you want to understand exactly what's going on here, you have to have a pretty broad range of interests, both on a literary level, a cultural history level, and, you know, you can't just have it your own culture. It's not like local stuff. It's like, you should know something about Robin Hood. You should probably know something about Al Capone. Who's Billy the Kid? What's his deal? And all of the good guys, the bad guys, everyone's bringing up all these weird allusions, and I think it's just neat.
Although, to be fair, some of these are kind of easy to understand because even if you are not like a Chinese kid like I am, who grew up with Three Kingdoms, at least you'd probably be familiar with Dynasty Warriors and
maybe
I'm not. And I didn't get that reference at all.
Me either. Well, until you brought it up, and then now I'm looking it up in another tab, and I'm like, oh, I see. Interesting.
Oh man. If only this episode was about a Guan Yu icon, I could talk your ear off about that.
That would be kind of awesome, actually.
I kind of like that Ghost is encouraging you to learn some stuff.
Yeah,
Ghost's like, go learn yourself a thing.
Yeah. It's really kind of impressive, and they do it in a way that isn't, you know, hey, kids, we've had a lot of fun here today, but you know what's great? Learning. Now I'm going to sit backwards on this chair, and we're going to rap a little about history. You know who was real OG? Ben K.
Oh man, I didn't even know Buffalo Bill even had any positive qualities attributed to him, but apparently he did. But, you know, it's still
we learned ourselves some things.
Yeah. It's been a lot of fun, actually. But to the matter at hand, I sort of shared the idea that 9 and 10 just sort of ran together thematically. And, I think the bit I picked up on, you know, Cannibal, you brought up loyalty, but what I picked up most on was what Sona was talking about, just truth. And how you have to have people around you so that you can check yourself, lest your assumptions and flawed understandings about the way things are cause you to wreck yourself. Makoto's got this single-minded pursuit of grimdark vengeance, even against the wishes of the person he's ostensibly working for. Takaru has to realize that there are other people in need of the magic, or whatever it is that we're calling the stuff that's working here. When you've got the 15 icons, culminating in everyone not realizing that one of their own has been possessed. It's glorious because it lets us, as an audience, see that the protagonists are all on the same side, even as we understand that they don't yet know that they're all on the same side, which is just one more lovely level of what is truth? Which, look, I love it. And bonus points to Akari for being the only one looking for truth, even as everyone else just keeps fighting and getting more complex and obscuring what they're about. Of course, she's only scratching the surface, and the rest of the show is hinting at all these other connections that have all got me. They've got me just so freaking hype. You guys, I'm just talking, like, thinking about the lore of this show has been driving me so wild these past couple weeks.
I'm so hype for learning about all this Ghost World stuff.
Here's the thing.
I can't wait for that to explode in our faces.
Here's the thing, like, and I hate to go and rip other series that I have been ripping on a semi-professional basis for the better part of, 3 years now? 2 or 3 years? But, Gaim and Drive both had these big, intricate sets of lore, and I didn't care.
Yeah, man, Gaim wanted lore so badly.
They had so much of it, and they're just like, hey, here's a bit of lore, isn't it interesting?
Okay, let's go do something else now.
Yeah.
I don't think
Drive even really has lore. I don't know if I even want to call it that. But it's not even, like, on the level that Gaim had lore. Like, stuff just happened in the world in Drive, and it went on with its life.
And to be honest, some of the lore in Gaim is so, like, 13-year-old fan fiction.
Oh, God, like, yes, but that's just how Urobuchi writes.
Yeah. But all the in all legends, there was a golden fruit that granted wishes, and it's like, Garden of Eve, and Garden of Eve, and another Garden of Eve.
It's like, okay, let's just take, like, actual real world lore and make it terrible, but, like, O's had lore.
Mm.
Like, this is really a level that we haven't seen since O's.
I think that is a good
I think Wizard had the opportunity but wasn't able to take it for reasons.
It wasn't.
And I mean, like, Double has lore, which is not as deep. It's not as old of a lore, but it's there. And I'm glad to have kind of something greater than the story existing in the background in a coherent way.
Yeah, and in a way that actually drives the plot.
That's why I can't say Drive has a lore. There's nothing outside the story.
Yeah,
well, it's just, okay, well, some things happened, and it only affects literally what's going on right now.
And in fairness, like, that's all the story is, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, story kind of always has to be, like, depending on what you're trying to do, but mostly, in most cases, I think story should take precedence over, like, the world building. Like,
you can't completely ignore world building.
Yeah.
You can't just like half-ass your world building because then you get Gaim.
Yeah.
Like you don't need an incredibly deep. Like, you don't need it to be incredibly deep. Like, look at Blade. It's not complicated. God said, I want to figure out which species should be in charge. So I'm going to I'm gonna make all of them fight. And that's it. That's the whole lore.
Yeah.
It's not complicated.
Yeah.
Even Fize's lore isn't that complicated. It's people die. Sometimes they come back as zombies.
Yeah.
Zombies get really angry.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't need to be complicated, but you can't half-ass it. Mm. Like, actually making it really simple is a really good idea, because then you don't need to do anything to it.
Yeah. Or, hey, Kuga's lore is basically, like, in ancient history.
Kuga's lore is the Monster Olympics happened, and now they're happening again.
Yep, yeah. Pretty much. Yeah. Now, before we get down another lore rabbit hole, because that's
we will talk about that for 10 hours.
Yep. And interrelated note, let's get to the bones we have to pick with this episode. Was there anything that didn't work for you guys?
This is not technically a legit bone to pick, but I can't take Javert seriously when he was Ken in Gekiranger. Like, they cleaned him up real nice, but I have seen the Gekiranger Christmas episode, and there's no coming back from that.
I'm just glad I haven't watched Gekiranger that far yet.
Yeah, everyone who hasn't seen Gekiranger is going to have a way easier time than me, because I can't take him seriously. I can't take him seriously when he was Ken. I'm like, how am I supposed to take this dude seriously when I watched him make a dick joke in a giant rhino robot?
Oh my god.
Like, no, I'm sorry, you are not a credible threat to me. I know you should be, but I can't do it.
Mm.
We haven't addressed the spider lantern problem at all. Mm. I mean, if Ikaru needs it for Benkei, then I could see it being something that will generally fall to him while everyone else will still use Shiranui. But I want it addressed. But I can let it go because there was so many more important things to take care of in these two episodes that there was just not time for that.
Yeah.
Like, everything that happened in these episodes was important. There was no time for it. I mean, really, I've got nothing. The only thing I can really complain about is this Spider Lantern thing, and maybe the lack of Captain Ghost. But, I mean, like, again, we clearly did not have time to deal with this Shiranui thing in 9 and 10. Mm. So I can let that go.
And so this is more of a personal pet peeve, but I was a little bothered in episode 9 how like Akari, when like Ghost and Spectre were fighting on the bridge, Akari was kind of like standing there in the distance, which, you know, was then later they kind of did like address that in episode 10 when she did like get to do something, get to interfere in the fight. So, and, you know, this is kind of a thing that's like, this is kind of a thing that's like in it, almost every piece of media that kind of has this sort of fight going on. It's nothing really new here. So,
it bothers me always. It didn't really bother me in 9, because when she didn't step in, Takeru was still in the ghost suit. Like, I feel like Akari is aware that there's nothing she can do when both of them are transformed. They way outscale her in anything she can do. When she steps in 10, Takeru's already been kicked out of Ghost.
That's true.
I'm going to it later, but that is such a good scene.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. God. I
am also going to be talking about that, but God.
Yeah, but
Akari is good.
Yeah, but yeah, this is just a like, personal pit peeve. I just kind of get peeved out by some of these moments when whenever it shows up everywhere. But that's just me. Like the episode 10, which is also not really, it's also pretty much a personal thing and has nothing really to do with the episode. I just don't know when to mention it properly, so I'm going to mention it now. I took a peek on the film preview at the end, and okay. Takeru's power-up is based on his dad's, like,
yes.
soul or something. Okay, that's a great idea. Why is that the film exclusive power-up?
Because they're saving because... the Shotaro Ishinomori one for the crossover with the next guy, I bet.
No. Because this seems like kind of a big deal, like with his dad and stuff.
It depends on how it's handled. It depends on how the movie handles it. I can't immediately call that out because again, I didn't watch the preview. I don't generally watch the trailers. It would depend on how they handle it and how they have him. It would depend on how. If he keeps that power at the end, if he's able to keep it after the movie, then it's a problem.
Yeah, it's...
If not, then I can deal with it.
Yeah. It's just, like, so weird that it's, like... I don't know, I just get, like, bad... I just get, like, some bad feelings about this because, like we know how, like, the previous two movies have just basically locked out so many vital character stuff and continuity stuff in the movies. And, like, I mean, Tyson... Yeah. I mean, that last Tyson movie, they locked out the epilogue of the film into a separate direct-to-DVD movie that you have to pay separately. It's like, God.
Like I said, if it's something where he keeps that power up after the movie and starts using it in the show, then it's a problem.
Yeah.
If at the end of the movie he can no longer use that power up again, then it's not a problem.
Well, hey, you know, if it's like he's gone back in time, he got it from his dad, then he has to get it again later in the show. I could handle that.
Yeah. I mean, even if just like he gets it, and he can only use it for a short amount of time. And then at the end of the movie, he can't use this power directly from his dad anymore.
Or maybe do a Hibiki thing where like the story of how like the writer gets the power up is different in each media. Like in, you know, how Hibiki, what was that form called? I don't remember that. The one where Hibiki turns red.
Yeah.
Like gold red. Like there was two completely different stories in the show and in the movie. So if that's what it does, then I'm okay with that. But if it's like they just like lock that whole thing out and it still shows up in like the show without any real explanation.
Yeah, that's a problem. I wouldn't put money on them doing it like Hibiki, where it's like an entire alternate separate thing, because that doesn't seem to be what they want to do anymore.
That's the only time they ever did it anyway.
Well, no, a lot of things back in pre-Decade Heisei were most of the movies were completely alternate universe.
Okay, yeah, that's true.
Like
yeah.
Missing Ace. Missing Ace was literally, let's write the other ending to this show.
Well, yeah. I don't know.
Godspeed Love.
I think the difference between how Hibiki did it and how those movies did it...
Disclaimer is I have not seen any of these movies. I don't know exactly how any of these movies did anything.
Okay, the thing is that Hibiki wasn't really, at least how it presented itself, it wasn't really so much as an... a alternative universe thing like those other movies, and more as like this is like the hidden history of the Oni Riders, and like this is the present day, like as if we kind of see this as like part of the serious canon. So it's like,
but if he's getting it in a different way than he gets it in the show, because when he gets it in the show he's never had it before, so it's clearly it's an alternate writing.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that's not a thing they've wanted to do from forward.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't put money on that being the thing they do.
Yeah, I get. Man, I do kind of miss those AU movie stuff.
Me too.
Actually. I haven't actually watched any of them. So I've seen 10 seconds of Godspeed Love, and I never intend on watching the rest of that movie.
Okay.
I've seen the only 10 seconds of that movie that matter. Yeah.
I watched the Fies Paradise Lost movie. I really liked it. It probably isn't a great movie in any ordinary standards, but I just kind of liked how much guts it had. Like, that movie pulled no punches. Like, oh my god, I still cannot believe they actually got away with it at all.
Nice. We'll have to give that a shot. But first...
One day I will... Based on that movie alone, well, not based on movie, I will one day finish all of Fies, and I will write an article that I will explicitly go against everyone I know and praise Fies.
I like Fies. I like a lot of things about Fies. Yeah, Fies isn't perfect by any means, but I like Fies.
Yeah, I just
Fies has really great design. People hate Fies. But people hate everything.
Yeah, that's true. So I want to write something about Fies, like there's a lot of things I think about Fies that people just don't really think about, and I want to write something about it, man. It's just, yeah. But
I look forward to reading.
That's
that.
I want to yell. I want to write a whole thing yelling at people who don't watch the second half of Hibiki.
Oh man!
I'll fight everyone. I love the second half of Hibiki. Mostly, I love the rest of the Zanki and Todoroki story. Everything else I can take or leave.
Yeah.
But I really think Hibiki is worth finishing for Zanki and Todoroki.
Well, we better move on this one. That was a long tangent. Anyway, that was all I had to say. So,
When we mentioned the Shiranui, so that's really the only thing I've got for bones to pick. Now, from there, we move on to Womance, the moments that make you say, whoa.
Those Christmas cards were adorable, and I want 800 of both of them. I mean, slight bone to pick is how the heck do Onari and the kids know what your son looks like? Because I don't think they've ever seen it. But it was on the ghost card. Also, the concept of a secret identity is laughable by this point in Kamen Rider. That is deeply amusing to me. But I mean, this is probably something kids are able to get from like magazines or at a department store.
Yeah.
But it doesn't feel intrusive, and I thought they were really cute, and I really want the Akari one.
And I have to also point out this secret identity thing in Kamen Rider, it never made sense. Even like in the first show, it did not make a lick of sense.
Well, I mean, I love that Amazon didn't even try. It's just, no.
Yeah.
This is Amazon. Everyone knows.
Yeah.
There's no... It actually makes more sense if he doesn't have a secret identity.
Because here's the thing. Yeah. If someone wants to, try and strike at Amazon through his friends and family, they will then have to deal with Kamen Rider Amazon, and nobody wants that.
Yeah.
That is
they got
dumb.
I mean, I'm still pretty sure in Double, everyone knew and was just humoring Shotaro. There's literally no way everyone in the city didn't know because he parks that bike out in front of the agency.
Pretty much. But
But I mean, back to this. Onari helping Akari calm down as she's talking and getting super excited about Igarashi, and he's just like, Akari, calm. In and out, breathe. I love the chemistry the two of them have together. It's really good. The belt's eye view as Spectre charged his finisher, that is the freshest shot I have ever seen, and I was absolutely floored by it.
Yeah, I was wondering,
use of motif and camera work.
Yeah, that was gorgeous.
That was A+. Akari being present for the entire fight with Makoto and the whole reveal about Kanon. And I mean, if you look at her, she's ready to run into that fight, but where could she have? There's no way she could have without getting herself hurt, and she knew that. But I love what this show is doing with her. They're just, everything is so strong.
Yeah.
And man, Cannon is quickly rocketing up there toward being my favorite, and I can't wait to see more of her and how her story is going to play out, because there's basically no way this can go wrong. There is one way this can go wrong, but I don't want to talk about that. We're getting glimpses of what's up with Alan, finally. We're going somewhere with that. Ten directs us toward the king of Ghost World being his brother, which is an interesting parallel to Makoto. I think that's really neat. But you've just got Alan as this like wacky hell prince trying to take over Earth for whatever reason. And I can roll with that. And it's setting us up for what's going to happen after these 99 days are up. And I like how we're getting that ball rolling now instead of just dropping it on us when we get there. Mm. Like, God, the pacing in this show is so good.
God, isn't it just?
It's getting done. It's getting done. That's what I've been saying.
It's getting done. The whole scene with Takeru reminding Igarashi of Ryu just got me right there in the feels. Did I cry in 8? I might have cried at 8. I don't remember. But if so, that's 2 weeks in a row that I've cried, and come on, Ghost. Like, that got me as cold as ice. And these episodes were brutal, and they are not letting up on the intensity, and it is good. I like that Alan implies that the way Makoto is changed is that he's gone soft, but that Takeru implies that he's kind of become too hard. You've got these two moments kind of focused on Makoto and how he's changing that really play off of each other and give him a nice depth.
Plus, it also kind of makes like implications on on both Alan and Takeru. Like, Takeru is like, oh, he's like concerned and sympathetic, but Alan's like, you guys.
No, man, just break everything.
Yeah. Why aren't you killing people
kind,
like
kind of
me?
Another facet on that same idea is that I like that Javert like absolutely destroyed Makoto in that fight because Makoto is too sentimental and he's too focused on how much he wants to protect and save Cannon. And it shows us that that Javert is strong and a credible threat to the protagonists, but it isn't just the new guy who showed up is strong and now the guy who is already here is weak.
Yeah.
Like, it's good writing at play.
Mm.
I love Takeru approaching Cannon and Makoto just throwing himself over the tiny icon, screaming, "Don't touch her." It's another one of these things that's factoring into this depth that Makoto has, because he's got this absolute madness when it comes to Cannon and protecting her. And there's clearly a lot at the root of that, aside from the broad stroke of the two of them got trapped in hell for 10 years.
But at the same time, I mean, that's all you need. Which is the elegance of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you're trapped in hell for 10 years with only your sister.
Good.
Yeah. Mm.
It's so good.
Yeah. Okay. And like, you hit a lot of the things I was going to mention, so I didn't need to bring them up. But here's my big takeaway in episode 9, right? Are the dead coming to colonize the world of the living? Because that is the most awesome idea ever. Just ghost fascist colonialists coming
to take
over the land of the living? That's madness, but it's so beautiful.
Hey, wasn't that the plot of Tyson? Wasn't that the plot of Kamen Rider Tyson?
Actually,
was it?
Kind of, yeah. Yeah, it was.
I didn't watch it.
Yeah.
It was the only good one of those. It was the only good superhero Tyson movie.
I didn't watch it because I hate Gun.
Yeah, which honestly, saying that it is what the best superhero Tyson movie isn't honestly saying much.
Yes.
But
they're all pretty bad.
Damn it, right? Yeah.
I mean, the only one I've watched is GP, but if that's any indication, they are.
I think GP is actually one of the worst ones.
Oh, GP.
Well, GP is a failure on every level.
Oh, no. GP. Here's the thing. The GP it was only the it was the second best. You haven't seen the first two because
I haven't seen the two Superhero Tysons.
You be nice to Superhero Tyson 1. All right? It was a piece of scrap, but it was a gorgeous one.
I haven't seen Superhero Tyson, but I'm willing to give it whatever cuz it tried. That was just an idea that they wanted to do and they did it.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really matter how good it is. But then you made three more.
Yeah,
exactly. At that point, you have to start learning, like, how to use it.
Honestly, I was even being kind of fair on Tyson GB. Like, okay, I can see why this needs to exist. But then
GT needs to exist. They just didn't do it right.
Yeah, exactly.
That whole movie should have been the last 10 minutes of that movie.
Oh man, now I'm hearing like all these things about the next Tyson movie, the all Ishinomori one.
They're doing Ishinomori Tyson?
Yeah, that's what they're going to use the Ishinomori icon in.
Whoville, they say Aleph's heart grew three sizes that day. Okay.
I'm so not like, I've seen how like,
oh, it's gonna be terrible, but it's a great idea.
Honestly,
There was one thing I wanted out of. Well, there were two things I wanted out of GP, and I got one of them. And the one thing that I got was just Amano Kosei existing. So, I was sold on that the minute they said he was in it. So that wasn't something they had to put effort into. But I wanted closure on Yuto and Irie. And they put Yuto in this movie, and I got zero closure. All I needed was one line.
All right,
and they did not give it to me.
Getting back to the other bit, I liked. I just in 9 and 10, I really started to notice how much I like the bit of the transformation where they slump forward, and then their arms sort of shake when they've been possessed. I just realized how much I liked it this week. And Cannibal?
Yeah, that's right. Because I haven't watched Picky Ranger that far yet, so I didn't need... My experience on Javert wasn't soiled, so I really liked
it. Look, I'm gonna ruin Javert for you. I'm gonna destroy this for you.
Oh no!
Because if I have to suffer, then everyone does.
No, let me live in happiness. Why do you have to do this to us?
Because I've watched this Christmas episode.
Oh no! Thank God the link is loading. Thank God the link is loading really slow. I can finish my thought before anything happens. I like Javert. Yeah, I like Javert. He was badass. He's like, I can already feel like this is probably gonna look really silly when I see that link. But whatever. Javert. I really like. But yeah, he's like the sort of classic like no. Like, he's the classic sort of no-nonsense, uniform-backed guy that we haven't really seen in a while. And I'm glad we've seen him, but I'm glad we see it. Like, you know, what's a good Heisei example that I can think of?
Double is the most recent one I can think of with Jin.
Yeah.
I mean, Jin wasn't a great character. But he was kind of the no-nonsense, uniformed bad guy.
I was almost going to go with the Leo Zodiarts from Forze. Mm-hmm. He was kind of like that, but...
He wasn't part of the school. He was there. He was just there to beat people up.
Was like, he was violence, but without that little soupçon of institutionalization, because like Javert, he's the first like one who feels like, okay, we are actively evoking Nazis, in a way that is not exploitative and which does not refer to Shocker.
I was kind of like thinking like Apollo Geist. You guys haven't seen Kamen Rider X, but Apollo Geist, it was like the... Oh, you have?
I guess maybe...
I'm talking to
Well, no, I'm still trying to think of more examples.
Okay.
Yagaruma might be a good example. From Kabuto.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
The first, the B. And then, then later Kickhopper when he's no longer an example of this.
yeah. But I really like Javert. He's like with the leather boots and the, like the,
I can't wait to see more of Javert, but I mean, look at this. Look at it.
Oh, man. Oh, dear. Let me finish my thought before I look at it. But also, this also shows up in the episode 10, but I really like his monster form, too. And it also harkens back to our, like, a little thing about, like, Kamen Rider, like, how they always emphasize eyes, like modern writers, and only rarely the mouthpiece. This one emphasizes on the mouth plate, the crusher, instead of bug eyes. I really like that. And, you know,
While we're on that, I kind of want to, this is something I go on about in when I get to my stuff from 10, but his belt is Showa as heck.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
This whole show has really been leaning on the Showa, and I really agree with it.
I mean, his belt is so, like, bright colors and cartoony.
Yeah.
It's a Showa, but, like, it's not even the sort of Rider 3 it's modernized Showa. Like, it's literally, that's straight Showa. Yeah, they got that out of a closet somewhere and, like, washed the dirt off it.
Yeah, it's like a bad guy Showa, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and plus, I also, you know, I get giddy by the notion that the Rider's enemy is now the most classical example of a jackbooted thug. That being Javert. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's, like, makes sense. Like, that makes complete sense to me. Like,
literary
if Judge Dredd
hell,
was...
Dude.
Yeah, it's like if Judge Dredd was public domain, he'd probably be next or something. There we go. And, also, the Guan Yu Yanma, he makes me happy. My Chinese-ness approves. I really like that. I didn't know he was gonna be in it, and it was a really pleasant surprise. And you know, just generally, like, we get, like, more answers that also serves as questions, and questions that serves as answers. Like, so much is being revealed, yet so much new things is being opened that probably are going to be answered pretty soon, seeing as how, you know, what happens in episode 10. And it's like, oh, man.
I mean, it's not the end of the show.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
I said before, I'll say again, there are writer series who are not going this hard at episode 40. They aren't going this hard at episode 48. And this one's going at episode 10.
Yeah. And also, and Takuro himself is really good in these two episodes. He's like, really has that, you know, this sort of heroic spirit and the passion. And his actor just really has stepped up since the first episodes.
Yeah, he's really come into the role very nicely in a way that I don't think I've seen. And I mean, this everyone in the cast has in a way that I haven't really seen since Forze, where I feel like everyone is really into their character.
Mm. Mm.
Oh, so, I mean, if you look at early episodes of Forze, I mean, what episode was Hound?
Let me think.
Hound was within, like, the first six episodes. Because it's right after Jake joins.
Yeah.
Because it's Shun's intro arc, isn't it?
I think it was, actually.
Because it was that teacher's son.
Yeah.
It was that teacher's son. So that's episode 7 and 8. If you watch Miu and Jake when they first confront Hound, the acting in, like, when Miu walks forward, the acting between the two of them is amazing.
Oh, yeah, I've seen a gif of that. That's really,
really nice. I wrote a whole big thing on it one time because I was just thinking about it and got really excited. But I feel like a lot of that is present here in Ghost, even in characters as minor as Shibuya and Narita. Mm. You've got this kind of acting between them, like when the two of them, at the end of 10, like when Shibuya is done being possessed and Naruto like jumps on him and starts hugging him, like, oh, dude, you're okay. I'm like, aw, these two are actually really good friends. They're not just, you know, two monks training in the same temple.
Mm.
Like, it's nice to feel that these people care about each other.
And also, like, speaking of character moments, in 9, I also, like, when they first, like, entered the, I think, like, the science center or something.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when there was, like, that one scientist was like, my lab assistant, he's got no talent at all. When strange things is happening, he should be looking for the truth. And, like, you know, getting to the bottom of this, and then Akari's like, yeah, right?
Akari's like, science! People understand!
I know, even right? Oh no, the laws of physics are being violated. Whatever, I'm gonna find out why.
Yeah.
I love Akari, but I just love how, like, immediately after that, and she's getting really hyped up, and Onari's like, okay, now you need to breathe. Breathe in and out, and she responds to that. She's like, yes, yes, you're right. I need to breathe. I don't want to die from being excited about physics.
Yeah.
Like, I love this cast in a way that I haven't in several years.
Mm. Now, if you just want to continue on that thought, Sono, we're moving into the moments for episode 10.
Yeah. And like I was saying, Shibuya and Narita, they got to be in episode 10. They got to be a major factor in episode 10. And I mean, they were used to bring that whole icon possession thing back into the game, which was nice. And we got real character put into them. That hug they have at the end. I'm glad for hugging. I'm glad there's so much hugging in Ghost. Just again, Akari bringing around the idea that your life means something to the people who care about you. And I'm still hung up on that because that's something that's real important to me as someone who spent a lot of time thinking my life had no meaning to anyone. She wasn't hesitant about it. She didn't try to persuade him softly. She wasn't like, no, Takeru, you matter, blah, blah. She's like, she laid it out and made her position very clear. She's like, no. I don't want you to die. Stop it. And just on that note, her calling him out when he tries to pull the same thing on her later, when she stepped in and tried to protect him. He's like, don't you care about your life? Well, don't you care about yours? And she shuts him down. She doesn't feel bad about it. She doesn't hesitate. She knows how little time that he has left. And she's scared and she's not having any of his nonsense.
Characters getting into the action. Yeah.
And I mean, speaking of people shutting each other down, Cannon just yelling no.
Yeah.
Like, I know we talked a couple episodes ago about if she could directly affect his transformation, and man, she may not be able to, but she will get her say if she wants it. Mm. And I mean, even after that, her standing up to him and being like, I don't want to come back to life if it means you're going to murder people. She doesn't want him falling deeper into this darkness that he's in because of her. And both Akari and Cannon have this fierceness to them that I'm really enjoying. Like, they're sweet and they're fun and they care about people, but man, they can get upset and they can get angry, and I'm so proud of them and this creative team for giving them a full range of emotions.
I think that's what happens when you don't just hire writer fan people to do the writing of your show.
Yeah, it's just, there is so much effort being put into the two of them, and I love it.
Mm.
Like, you can tell they care about their roles. Like, Akari and Kenan's actresses care about Akari and Kenan. and making them real and believable. It's good. It's good and nice, and I like it.
Good.
Also, Leo. Yeah.
And
wait, who's next?
Me. I think the things that really hit me were that, like, this show is so freaking dense. Again, it's just the same thing. We're at episode 10. This feels like the series finale. It's that good. I'm really impressed. And just to glom on to what you were saying, Sono, again, the Spectre canon scene was amazing, because on top of canon, you know, manifesting, calling him out, deflecting a Ryder kick with the power of her outrage, I really liked how intense that scene was, because for the first time, I think in a very long time, we've got a Kamen Rider about to attack two just normal people. I mean, admittedly, Takaru goes invulnerable, whatever. But
yeah,
like,
but he was pushed out of the suit at that point. He had no way to defend himself.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. Like, it was going to, at the very least, it was going to hurt the heck out of him, and it would absolutely have turned Akari into a fine red mist. And,
yes.
Like, here's the thing. Intellectually, you know, nothing's going to happen. Like, you know, yes, she's a lady, but, like, they wouldn't kill her this early. And he's the title character. So, like, that's not that's not going to happen. But on a lizard brain level, I'm like, oh, God, those guys are dead. Oh, man. And then Cannon pops out, and it's great. But just really good direction there, because a part of me bought it.
Yeah. And, like, even then, like, I wasn't sure he was going to miss. Like, even after Cannon said it, I thought, like, is he still going to hit Takeru? Like, I figured Akari would get out of there at least, but I'm like, is he going to miss?
I think that's, like, the first time I've ever seen, like, well, actually not the first time, but it's, like, first in a long time that I've seen, like, Ryder kick just outright missing in that sort of way.
Oh. I'm guessing, you know, he's pulling back. He's trying to pull out of the
yeah, no,
the
he was definitely, well,
of it,
I don't even, well, the thing is, I don't even think he was like, oh no, I need to do this. It's like, I don't want to hit Cannon.
Yep.
Mm.
That's immediately where his brain went, and that's why he pulled the side.
Just beautiful. It's a good character moment. Really, you know, he'll
it's
go
good.
Far, but he won't go that far, which is good, because that would really defeat the purpose of going far in the first place.
Yeah.
Which, but that also lets us know how far gone he is not.
Yeah. And I mean, like, it's, I forgot to mention this, I guess, but just, he just, when the Ganma has Cannon, and is like, give me your icons or I'll kill her, he's like, okay, here they are. I'm not even going to argue with you on this. It's just take them.
I really liked that.
It's just like, yeah, nope, take them. She is more important. And he's just like, oh, well, I'll get them back later. But, like, he wasn't thinking that at the time he threw them down.
Which I really like, because, you know, it's the thing. Okay, this is like, the most extreme example of the bit in the, you know, in the action movie, you know, where the hero sits down at the bar and the giant biker and or hillbilly says, you're sitting in my seat. And then they, you know, oh, I don't see your name on it. And then they fight. But, you know, instead they do the smart thing. It's like, hey, if you don't give me the things, I'll kill her. Okay, here you go.
Yeah, well, here you go.
Oh, this was your seat. Hey, man, I'm sorry. I didn't know. Because that's, like, that's what I do. I mean, again, I'm a coward, but... Because it's a seat, who cares?
Yeah.
They want me to leave? Okay.
Like, Makoto has no need to act tough. He's just, he's got his goal.
Yep.
And he's going through with it. It's like, well, okay. I need her to not die, so here you go. Take all of this and give her back.
Yep.
Yeah. And, so, I don't have any, well, I mean, you guys have said what I need to say, what I want to say, so,
okay. Sorry.
And, you know, and, well, I mean, what else is left to say? But man, episode 10.
Yeah.
Oh man. Oh man. Yeah. That, oh man. The thing is, I also feel like at least in episode, at least like either the next episode or the one after it, we are probably gonna get even more answers, and that's like, oh.
Yeah, and I mean, you remember where we were in the next couple of episodes last year?
Oh, yeah.
Go! Oh. Go! That's where we were.
But still, what is it? But
just look how much more we've accomplished.
Yeah, although I do have to kind of give, like, thought to the people who are not really as optimistic about the show as we are. And I do have to wonder, like, what are they going to do now that the 15 icons have kind of been collected?
Well, maybe, clearly, they're going to fight hell.
Yeah. Well, that's true.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know anyone who isn't optimistic about this show. Yeah. So
I'm sure they exist. I'm sure they exist
because everyone hates everything. But I'm not talking to those people. So
I do wonder what, like, because I think like the biggest problem so far in this show kind of is the whole day limit thing, because so many days just go by. And it's like, what did they do? What did they do? Like,
yeah,
in between
this. Like, that 30-day jump still bothers me, because it's just, what were you doing?
Yeah.
What were you doing in that time, and why was it not the ghost, why was it not the drive crossover?
Yeah, yeah. That's, like, the huge I think this, the one problem I think it is, like, it does, I'm not necessarily it's a problem so much as we can't see the future.
Yeah, well,
but it's like,
I feel like there's not going to be a time limit in the near future. But I
probably,
feel like I feel like that time limit is only really here to make us worried.
Yeah.
Like it's only really here to get, like, if there was no time limit, there would be nothing to worry about, because it would just be like, okay, we'll collect these and then you get to come back to life. And if there's no time limit on that, then it's just like, okay, well, who cares?
Yeah.
He's going to get them all by the end, so why are we worried?
Yeah.
But when you put in that time limit, it makes it kind of a threat, but it's not really relevant to the plot at all.
Yeah. It's like, I think the best case scenario here is that we kind of have to, like, the sort of arcs that like Blade had, like,
yeah,
that's the, like, Blade, because like the first there was like at first there was like the whole thing with Tachibana, and he's like, oh no, like, oh my body is gonna break down any minute now, and it's like,
you get Tachibana's arc, and then you get Mutsuki's whole I'm an angsty teenager with spiders in my pants arc.
Yeah.
And, like, then you get it. Then you finally start getting into, like, the Chalice arc.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is where the good stuff happens.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, yeah. And Tajipano arc, too. It's like, it kind of also, it didn't explicitly happen, but it also had kind of a time limit in the sense that, you know, what will happen to Tajipano? What will the same thing that happens to Tajipano, will that soon happen to, like, Kenzaki too? It's like, but, you know, later on in the show, well, there was never this time limit, or, like...
No, well, it never happened to Kenzaki, because Kenzaki didn't have the problem of being afraid it was going to happen to him.
Yeah, although it did give, like, a really, really good setup for what happens to Kenzaki later on,
much later
in the show.
It is kind of a weird, weird foreshadowing of that.
Yeah. Yeah, so I hope that we kind of do that sort of thing. Like, we just get, like, more, like, story opportunities. Like, we just get the whole time limit thing. We are just going to get done. We don't know how.
I think that's going away, like, in the next couple of episodes.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we now have all 15 icons, so it really doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah. I think the worst case scenario would be if they would, like, start hunting for all the 15 icons again, which would be kind of odd because
that would be a weird, tedious thing to do.
Especially
honestly, since we've got all of this set up with like Javert and Alan's brother going on in the background.
I'm still a little on the middle ground. Like, this is because for one thing, it will be really tedious to see this again, and these sort of collectathons will run thin really easily, really fast. But on the other hand, this is also like the one time I really genuinely want to see more of these collectible toys, because they actually are something interesting. Like, whoa, each of them has like a story and meaning to them. So it's like, I can take it or leave it. Like, I hope it's the Blade scenario, but I wouldn't.
I mean, I definitely think we're going to get more icons.
But I don't think it's going to be
within the same context that we've gotten these first 15.
Yeah, we are definitely going to get more icons because there's so many that I know that there is still many icons that Takeru's going to get that still haven't showed up yet. So,
yeah, it's just I don't think it's going to be within this same context.
Yeah. So
I definitely think we're still going to have the context of he needs to save his own life and Makoto needs to save Kanon. But I think Sage is going to step in and be like, yeah, that time limit was just a thing. I can make that not a thing.
Oh, my God, that would be. Oh, man, that would. I don't know how to. I would not know how to respond to that.
Well,
if that
I'm just
were to happen,
hope that they don't do that, because that would be very frustrating.
I think it would depend on the context in which they do it. Because I think Sage being like, okay, well, a thing is going on and I need you to take care of it, so I'm suspending the rest of your time limit until that's over.
That would work. That would be a good compromise, because otherwise I'd just be like, I just flash back to like the Gaim thing where Sagara just keeps giving Kota all the power-ups, just whenever it's convenient.
Sage isn't giving him icons.
Yeah, that's true.
It's just, I'm gonna get this time limit out of the way, because there is clearly more important ish going on, and I would like the world to not end.
Yeah. Or hell, if you've seen the next episode preview, maybe that weird nether space that Takeru's in, maybe that will be the answer. It's like, whatever happens, and it's just, we'll have to wait and see. I hope the best case scenario happens, and so far Ghost hasn't disappointed me at all, so
I'm willing to trust them with whatever they're gonna do
now. Yeah, but speaking of trust and speaking of icons, some of the questions Amit left behind: how much do you like the Benkei icon?
Well, I'm a huge sucker for, like, giant hammers and axes and all that, so I'm pretty on board. I'm also a sucker for a white suit.
Yeah, I really like the costume, the icon, the hoodie, the giant prayer bead representing things are really cool, but, like, I feel just dumb as heck, because I just never quite understood what that weapon was supposed to be, mostly because the spider lantern only attaches on one side, so it just sort of looks like, hey, someone cut this lantern in half and stuck it to the end of a sword.
It's a hammer.
Okay.
It's a hammer.
Okay. I'm not saying you're wrong. I just never.
I like big hammers.
It reminds me of
the radial hammer.
Like one.
It looks enough like a hammer for me, where I'm just like, okay, well, this is clearly what they're going for.
And I thought the suit was okay.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
I honestly have nothing else to say. I was just like, oh, Benkei icon. Okay.
Yeah, I think that's more than fair, though.
I do like the face decals, though. As I've stated before, the face decals are probably the best parts of these suits.
They are really cool, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's all these nice little historical references, but yeah. Now, is Benkei the first icon to have two different versions of the finisher?
Are they different? I'm not very good at keeping track of that kind of thing, so I did not notice. But,
Amit has said that in 9 it's a ranged one, and then in episode 10 he's dropping the Omega Bomber.
Yeah, it's like...
I thought they were Omega Bomber the both times, but I guess maybe they worked a little differently? I don't know.
The first time, I'm really bad at keeping track of that. The first time it was like these sort of flying weapons sort of thing.
That's true.
Oh, yeah. Right. I guess it is two different ones. Huh. Well, what do you know?
Yeah. I guess it's kind of like the sort of thing like, well, his thing is that his face decal is that he has thousands of different weapons. Maybe that means he just has multiple finishers.
Which, you know, because maybe.
That would be good.
Unlimited Blade Works.
Summon up an army of invisible riflemen.
Oh god, this is going to be Shiro versus Gilgamesh all over again. I'm making Fate's Day Night references, but that would be fun to watch in the context of a thing that I actually kind of want to pay attention to.
See, I haven't seen Fate's Day Night, so I'm just like imagining. So I'm just like in those.
It's
characters.
Literally two guys with an infinite amount of weapons fighting each other.
Yeah. But it's like, because I don't know what those characters really look like, so I'm just imagining, like, Shiro. Okay, what's a thing that looks like, what's a thing called
it's
Shiro?
It's basically a dude who looks like Ichigo from Bleach fighting an angry blonde dude.
Okay, because I was, like, imagining Shiro from Crayon Shin-chan somehow fighting, like, a half-naked beard Babylonian dude. Which
oh,
is
God,
like,
no,
oh my
God.
It's like
Bishonen Gilgamesh.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's a little... I would have wanted to see, like, a half-naked Babylonian man-god thing.
Oh, well, no, that's... that. You get that in Berserker, who is Hercules.
Oh my god, okay. Does he have the lion thing going on? You know,
he's just a giant, angry man.
Well, a lot of Greek was about angry men, so...
He's a giant angry man serving a tiny little girl who wants to murder people.
Oh my god.
Unlearned Blade Works is a good time, and I highly recommend it. Except for some parts. It comes with a warning, but it's still pretty fun.
Now, before we get off on a tangent again, where do you think Makoto got all those other icons? Did he have to let people die to get them, like Takeru could have done with Mari and the Robin Hood icon?
Well, I mean, Makoto is currently the king of making big, stupid, terrible choices, so maybe. But I have to imagine that if he let people die, Canon would be really upset and wouldn't be like, oh, well, if you do this, you're going to be a terrible person and I don't want to come back to life. I feel like she'd be like, you have done horrible things. Stop it. She doesn't seem like she would be okay with him letting people die. But he also doesn't seem like the kind of dude who's going to be going around solving all of his problems with hugs. So maybe it was kind of an Edison thing where he just did the exorcism, took the icon, and left.
I think the only thing I could ever think was that, like, Tutankhamun was a gift from his BFF Aran. And admittedly, that's pure headcanon, but there was a joke I was making with Amit earlier this week about Makoto being Ghost Moses.
Oh,
that's a good conversation. Y'all should go back on their Twitters and read it.
Yeah, well, because, okay, again, the thing is, like, okay, if he was indeed adopted by the royal family of the dead, he's basically Moses because he wants the emperor to let his people go. And then he gets to have the Tutankhamun icon because it's Egypt. You know, it's pure headcanon, it's nonsense, but the upshot is, if that's true, then when he tells the dead that he wants them to let his people go, he's going to destroy all of history, accidentally. Because...
Oh, God.
Well, because when you free the living from the tyranny of the dead, that's all of human knowledge. Period.
That's true.
Pretty much.
That's true. And, my reply to the question is, what do you think, listeners?
And we'll get to that.
Share your thoughts.
Now, Javert says that Makoto acting for personal reasons is, quote, treason, end quote. What ties do you think Makoto has to Aaron's family? And to what degree do you think that Aaron is acting regarding Makoto? Is Aaron recovering for Makoto, or does he have his own agenda?
This was my question, actually. I wrote this question. Thinking about it, I was like, we do still have this line from Alan about Makoto being his best friend that we haven't really addressed. So I, even prior to this conversation that you guys had, I was thinking maybe Alan's family took Makoto and Cannon in, and Alan grew up with them over these 10 years in this, you know, bad part of the ghost world. And maybe Alan's like, hey, I know you want to save your sister, so maybe you can have this belt, and maybe you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours.
Hmm. That's pretty much how I'm thinking, clearly, so I'm right with you.
Because, I mean, like, Javert seems to be okay with Makoto doing all this stuff, but he didn't know why he was doing it. So maybe Alan was like, oh, Makoto wants to help us with our goal of taking over the living people. And then Javert finds out, oh no, he's doing this for his sister. That's not right. I gotta tell people about this. And Alan's just like, no, I got it. It's okay. Don't worry.
Oh my god. Oh, I didn't delete this part. My answer, which I didn't actually write. I just wrote this as a joke because I didn't come up with any. I hadn't come up with any answers, but now it's there. Oh dear. Do I read this?
Yeah, go for it.
You don't have to if you don't want to.
Yeah, it's just some nonsense I have wrote. But yeah. Anyway, let's skip my reply.
Okay. So now we move on to forcing perspective, where when we ask some more challenging questions about the thematic matter of Kamen Rider Ghost. For instance, is Ghost sending mixed messages about the agency one has over one's own life?
I don't think so. I mean, ultimately, your choices are your own, and no one is taking away Takeru's ability to decide what he wants to do. He's just being reminded to consider all sides of it and how his choices will affect the other people around him, and especially the people that care about him.
Which is, like, it's really good, and, like, I admit, I step out of the direct drama, and I'm just like, oh yeah, this is a really good way to create a sense of conflict and accomplishment when he doesn't if he doesn't manage to pull out a clean win at the end of this next chunk or with his next batch of things, because everyone is like, hey man, you should make sure you stay alive. Yeah, but what about Cannon? It'd be nice if she was alive. Yeah, exactly. So I'm going to sacrifice myself for her. No, don't do that. But that poor kid. I don't know. It's a really good setup for drama.
And my answer is the same as Sono's, in that I think the point of the conflict was more about considering the thoughts of others and not to do things recklessly. The issue with Takeru's decision is that it's based on his recklessness that ignores his own well-being, while Makoto's decision is also based on recklessness that he ignores the well-being of the one he tries to save. You know, didn't come and this other answer is actually for a later part of the question. Wait, hold on.
I mean, I'm gonna surprisingly not reference Bokenger and instead reference Dekaranger. There's a scene where Doggy gets hurt and he's in kind of the medical ward and Swan is helping him. And he's like, I have to go help them fight, because otherwise Bon is going to do something reckless and get himself hurt. And Swan's response to this is, oh, so you want to go do something reckless then? And it's like, man, we sure have cornered the market on recklessness here in Decabase, haven't we? Just kind of rubbing in his face that, like, he's doing the thing he's complaining about. And, I mean, I think that's kind of a good thing, and I like that we've got all these ladies calling people out on that.
Mm.
That's nice. Yeah. It's nice for me.
Oh, I see. I see why I was confused. The question that was originally on this part is not there anymore. So, okay.
Well, that would certainly explain it.
Okay.
I was kind of lost because I wrote something that I don't remember, like, writing it for this context because the question wasn't there. So, yeah.
Now
anyway, let's continue.
Next question was, is Ghost saying no to suicide, with Takeru realizing that he is not the only one with the right to value his own life?
I mean, given the context of Haruto in Wizard and Hiromu at the end of Go Busters, it wouldn't be the first time that Toei has addressed this in their, you know, superhero time toku shows. Because, I mean, that's literally the end of Go Busters, is Hiromu realizes that the only way they can win is if he kills himself.
Oh,
and he's
wow.
ready to just throw himself off a building.
Oh, my God.
Enter is able to regenerate himself, and what allows him to do that is inside Hiromu. So Hiromu's like, well, if I jump off this building and kill myself, the problem is solved. And everyone's like, Hiromu, that's stupid!
That's grim.
That's the worst idea! Don't do that!
Mm.
And I mean, the entire plot of Wizard is that Haruto is suicidal. And is saving other suicidal people from killing themselves, essentially.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it wouldn't be the first time, and I think it's a good... I'm pretty much on board with anything that acts towards suicide prevention.
Yeah, I'm right with you, but at the same time, like, I really hope they get more into stuff about finding value in life without necessarily contrasting it against, you know, the specter of death. I mean... I get that this is, that, you know, life is more valuable the more you realize how fragile and temporary it is, and the show is about a dead guy, but there's just a lot of cool stuff in life that is more than just not being dead. And like, I'm not saying that to like, take anything away from anti-suicide messages. It's like, there's also more going on than not being dead.
Yeah, and
smelling,
I mean,
a flower, watching a sunset.
You can look back to Wizard for that, because Wizard was not openly about dying.
Yeah,
whereas this is a show literally about a dead guy.
Yeah.
Who's, you know, fighting with his own mortality.
Yeah.
So I think mostly that being here is due to context.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm. But yeah. Would be nice. Would be very nice.
Now, what do you think about Cannon saying that she doesn't want to come back to life if Makoto will become a terrible person to make it happen?
I mean, I get where she's coming from on that. Makoto is doing all of these things to try and save her, and she can't do anything about it. And I think more than anything, she's trying to get him to kind of slow down and think about what he's doing so that he's not going to do something that he'll regret. Because, man, if he kills Takeru and takes his icons and saves Cannon, like, once that's done, he's going to sit down and realize, like, oh, I literally killed a man that I was very good friends with. Oh, God.
Oh, and also, I don't have a sister anymore because she totally disowned me.
Yeah. Like, Cannon's very much trying to do this, like, I want things to be what they were when I was not dead. So I would like you to not be terrible. It's like, if you're gonna be terrible, you're not gonna be the Makoto that I'm looking to come back to. So, I'm willing to be this tiny eyeball if it means we get to go on being the way we were.
Yeah, and I think it's a really nice mirror to Takeru's conflict, which is, you know, basically about the same thing. Like, are you willing to live at the cost of someone else's soul? Like, in her case, is she willing to live at the cost of her brother's soul, but at the moment Takeru's conflict is he willing to live at the cost of Cannon's?
Yeah.
And I mean, Tucker is still in that conflict, but Cannon doesn't have any conflict about it. She's just like, no. No, man.
Screw this.
I know what I'm about.
Which, I really like her.
I love Cannon. I love Cannon so much.
Magical pink eyeballs.
Yeah.
I love Cannon.
Now, the flashback to Ryu and Igarashi's conversation. Oh, I'm sorry. Cannibal, did you have more you wanted to add?
No, you basically said what I was going to say, so.
Yeah, sorry about that, dude.
I mean, we're all just mostly coming to the same conclusions.
Well, it either means that we've got too much of a hive mind thing going, or this show is really good at what it's doing. Probably a little of both.
Yeah.
I feel a little upset because,
oh man, we just come to the same conclusions, and it's like nothing. Well,
I don't know, man. We got in a fight over episode 3.
Well, okay, yeah, that time, but that's true. Yeah, that's true, man. But anyway, let's continue.
The flashback to Ryu and Igarashi's conversation in Ghost 9 made it look like they saw impending doom, and Ryu had to assure Igarashi that they could somehow stop it. Takeru has just over 3 weeks left until he becomes completely dead and unable to act in the world. Especially with his decision to save Cannon first, Takeru has to ensure Akari that he will be able to save himself as well. Do the Tenkujis have blind faith or confidence and a firm belief? And with whom does it play better?
I can't say for sure that Ryu has this blind faith in being able to stop some big bad thing, just because we don't know the whole story on his end. So I can't say, like, does he have a plan? Or does he just think, we'll cross that bridge when we get to it, and I'm a good person so I can fix it? Because we do have this scene with him and Makoto where he's like, Makoto, one of these days, you're gonna have to do the hero thing. Like, Ryu seems to have a lot more cards up his sleeve that we haven't seen yet. So I'm not willing to make the call with how Ryu is seeing things or whether or not it's working better with him than Takeru. Because we know a lot more of Takeru's cards. And Takeru very clearly believes in what he's doing and that he has the means to do it. I'm not sure if I'd call it blind faith because he kind of knows his strength, but it's definitely this kind of extreme confidence in himself. And I do really think that it works for him because no matter how high he's setting this goal of I'm going to save Cannon and then I'm going to save me and I'm going to do it in like a week and a half. Like I don't really find myself doubting him. Like even if logistically it's like, can you really do that? I'm like, no. No, I think this kid can do it, and not just because he's the main character. I'm just like, I'm willing to put my money in with this one.
And me, like, I'm just over here having tons of feels about what are good ways to portray magicians in fiction? Because look, I know we aren't, you know, Ryu's not actually a wizard, and neither is Takeru. But look, they're guys who explore in the unknown, and when they meet the unknown, they tweak its nose. Like, and you gotta have confidence to do that, because that is a supremely stupid thing to do. Oh, hey, what's up? I discovered a ghost dimension.
Let's go see what's in it.
Yeah, I'm gonna go stick my head in. Are you sure
let's
you should do that?
Let's go poke a stick with it.
Yeah, let's poke with a stick. I don't know. Crazy monolith. Let's see what happens. Bah! And like, I admit, like, if we're talking about just who wore it better, I feel like Ryu got it. But, you know, especially with that bit where he just sort of, like, hops over the little bridge, in front of the monolith. I don't know. That's just one of those really good, like, comfortable in his own skin moments. And I admit a lot of that's just because an adult wears that better than a kid. Like, Takeru will get there, but first he has to discover what the actual F is going on here.
Yeah, like, Ryu just has a lot more cards, I think.
And maybe we'll get answers once we know about this mysterious spirit world that apparently has imperialist conquerors coming.
God, I'm so
right?
I'm so hype. Now, speaking of the dead and I don't know, I'm going to pretend that I had an elegant segue there. On to Takaru's Heroes. Now, while each episode of Ghost has a small amount of information regarding the hero featured, we here at the Uncommon Cast RX wanted to step it up and do some research of our own and share what we learned with each other and with you, our listener. So, with the
can I
Heroes,
read?
What's that?
I was just going to ask, can I read this one this time?
Oh, yeah, please do. Please do.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, wait, hold on. Okay. Benkei, the badass monk, lived approximately 115. My grasp of English is starting to fail me finally.
1155
what?
To 1189.
Yeah, that's it. My
numbers are hard.
Yeah, brain.
I'll just do that one for you.
Yeah, my brain started shortcut. It's really late here. But still, the following is from the Encyclopedia Britannica site, which will probably be linked on the main site, probably. With some little information sprinkled in from the wiki page. So, Benkei died 1189 in Japan, is a warrior monk whose legendary superhuman exploits in the service of his master, the famous warrior Minamoto Yoshitsune, made him one of the most popular figures in Japanese history, and a favorite in many traditional stories and plays, and even in motion pictures. Although his name appears twice in documents from the period, thus affirming his actual existence, Benkei is better known as a legendary figure. He was once known as Oniwaka, or Demon Child, as a youth, and grew up to be 2 meters 6 feet 7 inches tall. Is that sweet
sheet? Jesus Christ!
Yeah, I think that's how it reads, yeah.
Titan.
Yeah. He is said to have met his master while attempting to collect 1,000 swords from passerby, whom he nightly challenged to duels on the Gojo Bridge.
Oh, okay.
Featured in this week's episode of Kamen Rider Drive. Not Drive, Ghost. No, good drive would never have this.
I keep doing that too, actually. I don't know why I keep thinking this is still Drive.
Yeah, the pain is still there. It will never go away.
Maybe just
because
I wanted Drive to be a better show.
Oh, but anyway, in the capital city of Kyoto, having collected 999 swords, he was foiled in his attempt for the 1,000th by Yoshitsune, whose follower he then became. After ingeniously aiding his master in many battles, Benkei is said to have died defending Yoshitsune, who was surrounded and forced to commit suicide at the Battle of Koromogawa. According to legend, Benkei's body, which was pierced with arrows, remained erect even after battle death. Oh yes, I actually heard of this one legend.
Yeah, I feel like this has come up in things that I've watched.
Yeah, I've heard of something similar, too.
I remember this from one episode of Detective Conan, but...
It's been a long time, but maybe that is where I'm remembering it from.
After his father's death, Minamoto Yoshitsune, born 1159, was placed in a monastery to be raised as a Buddhist priest, but ran away at age 15 and joined his older brother. It seems he encountered and defeated Benkei on the Gojo Bridge. At that time, Benkei became a loyal follower of his, and Yoshitsune went on to lead his brother's Yoshitsune went on to lead his brothers forced to victory in battle despite his youth. Yoshitsune's brother Yoritomo had killed in had been getting killed. It had him killed. Ah, goddammit. I'm screwing this up, sorry. But Yoshitsune's brother Yoritomo had him killed in 1189. Benkei died standing up while fighting on a bridge and killing 300 soldiers, which allowed Yoshitsune privacy for seppuku, the ritual sacrifice. Yoshitsune's head was delivered to his... Did this really write Oni-chan? Okay.
Jesus then, Christ. There is... That is the worst suffix to be using here.
Yeah. Someone did not look up appropriateness rules here.
Oh, dear. He really loved
his brother.
You know what? You know, I'm gonna just... There we go.
There we go. His brother. His brother, who then made a move to consolidate power and fully found the shogunate. Shogunate? I never knew.
Shogunate.
I never figured how it was supposed to be pronounced. But shogunate, which lasted for 700 years and undermined the central authority of the emperor, diffusing it among the feudal lords. Yoshitsune and Benkei were instrumental figures in bringing about this long-lasting change in Japan. So, pretty cool, pretty cool.
Interesting stuff.
Dude is impressive.
And even got a little bit of that rebellion thing going on, eh?
Yeah, we're big fans.
Yeah, well, I'm a big fan. I also have to mention, there is actually... In Kamen Rider Super 1, they actually did have a character who was also like a martial artist monk, literally named Benkei. So, it's pretty obvious what it's taken after. But it's actually kind of funny because in Kamen Rider Spirits, specifically the Shin Spirits, which is kind of the sequel but not really, I don't remember why it changed its name. It's still the same story. But yeah, in Shin Kamen Rider Spirits, they actually added like an older sibling, an older sister to the martial artist brother. And she is also a martial artist. And her name is Yoshitsune. And she's like, okay. She's like super badass. Like,
good.
She literally, in two pages, she killed a kaijin. She killed one of the cyborg monsters from Super 1, which is like normal human. She killed it with kung fu.
Good.
That is the way it is done.
She is amazing. She's a really cool character. She was like made specifically only for the manga, for the comic, but she's really cool. I always kind of have that secret hope that maybe, like just maybe, they'll have like a character who is like her, integrated in like Kamen Rider, like the show proper, like maybe not literally. Like, as, like, the brother of a character from, like, the show from 1980, but still, like, a character like that, because it kind of does show up a few times in, like, at least throughout, like, Kamen Rider comic. Like, in Kamen Rider Zeto, there was this...
I don't know, man. Rinko was beating up monsters. Yeah. Rinko beat up monsters left and right. She didn't care.
Yeah, get more of that.
I would love more of that. Rinko, Daimon Rinko is perfection.
Yeah, we just, you know.
I mean, she's just like, okay, police issue handgun and my pocketbook. All I need to fight monsters.
I'm just saying, we need more.
I agree, we need more.
Yeah.
And I mean, this is what I wanted from Kiriko.
Yeah.
I didn't need Kiriko to be a writer. I just needed Kiriko to beat up monsters.
Oh dear.
Stopped happening.
That's what happened when they stopped shipping her with sick monster kills.
Yeah.
Because like those first few episodes, she was, you know, clearly her and Gun were the OTP. And then they're just like, nah, we're gonna put her with Mr. Charisma there.
I don't wanna be that guy, but
that's a thing that I'm at, that's a thing that I forgot I was annoyed about in 10, I believe. We've been seeing stuff for Movie Wars. In the openings, we get this shot of Kiriko. It's like the only shot of like just her, and it's just her like holding up her hand and showing her like engagement ring or wedding ring, and I'm like, can you not for once?
Yeah.
Just one time, Drive. Can you not do this? And then the next day, I had a dream in which that was Kiriko from the future, and Kiriko in the present, and she did that, and Kiriko in the present just arrests her.
Oh, man.
I reject this future. I'm putting you in jail.
Oh, man. It's like the Kiriko that we hoped was going to happen.
The Kiriko that should have been.
Yeah. Oh, man.
No. Present Kiriko is just like, I reject this future. You're going to jail.
Yeah. I reject this reality and substitute it with my own.
I don't even remember anything else that happened in that dream. There was a lot of other stuff, but that is the only thing I remember.
Yeah. Oh, man. But yeah, I think the next up is Prophecy.
You are correct, right? Sir. Yeah. Wherein we'll take an eye to the future, project what we see happening, and what we'd like to see happening, both in the short and long term, in Kamen Rider Ghost.
I mean, we've got this scene between Makoto and Ryu, like I mentioned, where Ryu tells Makoto that he's gonna have to obtain the heart of a hero, and maybe this is what's driving Makoto so hard to fight for Kenan, because Ryu says that he wants to help others, and maybe Makoto's taken that a little too close to heart, where he's like, I gotta be the hero, so I gotta save my sister. But man, at this point, I really don't even know. We've just got so many factors in play that it's hard to take a guess at anything right now. I mean, I'm still leaning on Takeru either eventually giving up his icons for Kanon or using his wish for Kanon instead of himself, and then maybe Makoto using his for Takeru. But man, like, I don't know at this point.
Well, for my own part, I'm imagining we're eventually going to have to cross over into Ganma country, just because it seems like a thing that needs to happen, because the land of the dead is a lonely place for the living. I'm guessing those monoliths are going to become more and more important, and that control of them is going to be a major deal before the end, just because once we've moved out of icon control, we've got to move to giant eye monolith control, because apparently they're building more techno monoliths or something.
Yeah, no, Alan was trying to build one.
Yeah, I'm really interested about what's going on there, because it was not explained, and things they don't explain actually somehow tend to be interesting in this show. It's weird. And I think that means eventually we're going to get another assault on the temple, because in 10, we had Sionji breaking in, busting his way through, alright, I'm going to do the ritual to do the thing. And I'm just thinking that'd be a great way to funnel our heroes to Ganma World.
Oh man, I forgot to mention that scene in the episode 10, like the really cool moments, the part where Akari was doing the science thing, but then knocked out by the monolith, and then Sionji just walks in, and it's like, whoa.
Like, who knew that tiny, skinny man with the terrible teeth could be just such a stone-cold badass?
Yeah.
We started episode with him walking up to his former partner's grave, being like, ha-ha, rotten hell, buddy.
Yeah, I know.
And I'm still not over that.
Yeah.
It's like, I hope you're enjoying the show from hell. It's like, dang, dude. Calm down.
Look, that is some proper super villain level hate, though. Because, like, look, anyone
man,
can
it
hate.
Is.
He is a man who has devoted an empire to building the machine to spit on that dude's hamburgers.
Yeah.
And, like, just this one dude.
Yeah.
He doesn't even hate, like, the world. It's not, like, a Maki thing. Nope. Where he wants to, like, end everything. He's just like, I just really hate this one guy.
Yeah, I'm really hoping that the wish is, I want to bring him back so I can shoot him in the head.
Oh my god.
I mean, he's encroaching on the territory of the angriest hobo in Goanger, who was unironically played by Takumi from Fize.
Oh my god. Oh my god.
Nice.
It's an episode that ties into the very weird Goanger movie, because Goanger is incapable of being anything other than extremely weird. Where they go to Samurai World and there are samurai engines that can turn into samurais, and they are Takumi, Umeko from Dekaranger, and I forget who the third one is, but like, then in this related episode, it has something to do with Takumi guy's sword, and there's a guy in human world who looks just like him, and he's really angry about being poor and homeless, so he wants to end the world.
Oh my god.
It's like, okay, well, I now have this, and I can end the world with it, and I hate everything because I'm poor and homeless, so sure, let's end the world.
Look, in fairness, I get it.
Hey man, I am very poor and I get it. But I'm like, that's... this is like, Goanger is completely ridiculous, and I'm like, this is really heavy for Goanger.
And
also this is Fize. Also, this is literally Takumi playing himself as the angriest homeless man.
Also that whole thing, that I think that's literally the plot of the whole Tyson GP sequel DVD movie thing with the Kamen Rider 4, what I've seen of it. Oh my god.
I mean, like, I hadn't watched the Goanger movie, and I got to this episode, and I'm like, clearly I have missed something, and had to go back and watch this movie. But I mean, Goanger never tries to take itself seriously. They solve a problem with the girls and the lead female villain becoming an idol group.
Oh my god.
That's how they solve a monster of the week in one episode.
That's a pretty good way to solve a monster.
It is. It is. Goanger is amazing. But, this is some really heavy victim of the week, monster of the week stuff for a show about giant talking cars where one of them sometimes speaks Spanish because it can.
Anyway,
you had some stuff cannibal.
Oh yeah, my prophecies and stuff. Usually on this part, I usually just say I hope it still keeps being good. And I still hope it being good. You know, I still hope that, but I now have a thing to go on because
do it.
Like we all know now. We know now about the Ganma world, like there's gonna be some giant huge empire probably like coming out, and we can now Sage, right? Like Sage is most likely, pretty much most likely gonna be probably from that Ganma world. Like you look at how he acts, how he dresses, and you know, his weird powers, he most likely is like whatever like these Aran and Javert are, he's most likely like the same sort of spirit thing as they are. So
I've been wondering if maybe he was like, if he was the king, and if like he's Alan's dad, and we found out that their leader is Alan's brother, so maybe his brother like took over and threw Sage out, and Sage like, I need to punch my kid in the face.
Yeah, that's the thing I was getting to. So like, what if like, okay, so what if like Sage is helping Takeru in an effort to like fight the empire, like, and their plans of conquest, like he's like the rebel, the sole like contrarian against the regime who's trying to overthrow it. That's why he's helping Takeru. Like, Takeru, you're gonna help me. There's like these humongous Losas coming through, and we gotta stop them because we hate that.
Like, believe me, I know these guys.
Yeah, or you know,
something. If not the king, kids? I'm wondering if he's
maybe
like...
Yeah,
would have
turned out better.
Yeah.
And or, you know...
On that level, I'm really hoping there's a ghost mom queen.
Yeah. Or, you know, or if they are going to do the king thing, or if it is going to turn out to be, you know, another Sakura thing where he where he was, like, using Takara as a pawn, maybe, like, when at the end, like, at the finale, when, like, Evil Sage reveals his, you know, like, reveals his true form or, like, becomes the monster and he's like, oh, you know, look at this, Takara. Our empire, my empire shall be, you know, we shall rise from the ashes of the old world. And it's like, Takara go like, no, screw this. And then, like, punches the monolith, like, punches, like, the one thing that keeps these two worlds together and then, like, destroys it. And, you know, maybe we get kind of like this sort of bittersweet thing, like what Takara would get sucked into the Ganma world. But then he will, like, keep fighting on in the other side. It's like ensuring that nothing will ever come out to harm humanity again. And, you know, like, for the freedom of all living things, he will fight as Ghost, you know, right, no matter where he is. So it's like, whoa, this sort of, like, cool, sort of bittersweet ending thing. Like, kind of like, yeah, that sort of thing. Like
I really
Blade.
I really don't want Sage to be evil, though. I really don't want a Sakura thing. I really don't.
So that's why I'm...
That would be like though, 3 years in a row, and I can't deal with that.
I have to say, though, so like, the way you're describing it, it sounds like the best version I've heard, because...
It sounds good, but they've done this 3 years in a row, and it's always been bad, and I can't deal with it.
Yeah. These guys are not, you know, terrible.
Yeah, but I mean, the wizard guys weren't terrible, but White Wizard was still a terrible idea. And that was something that was clearly there from the beginning and always intended, and that was still not a good idea.
That's why I'm putting the Rebel Sage idea too.
I like him either being this, like, deposed king who wants to go punch his son for doing terrible stuff, or being this Merlin kind of figure.
Yeah.
Who's like, yeah, I serve and help the royal family doing their stuff, and oh god, no, they are terrible. I am out.
Yeah.
You know,
Sage outie.
Especially since, like, if he's a rebel too, that does address my one big problem with his character, which is, like, I don't think Kamen Riders need mentor figures. Like, you know, I never wanted Ghost to have, like, a guy who says, hey, you go do the thing without questioning what I'm doing or why I'm telling you to do it. And, like, if Sage is also a rebel, then, like, that's sort of like, oh, okay.
That isn't really a mentor figure. That's kind of just a boss.
Yeah,
Sage, I can let it go because it's just like...
Well, also because Takara is
like, it's not
like
he's walking in... Well, yeah, but it's not like a crim thing where he's just like, hey, this thing is happening, go fix it. It's more like, hey, you want to not be dead, right? Here's how to not be dead.
Yeah, he's more of like this eccentric Merlin thing.
He's kind of offering to carry the solution to a problem instead of like, I have a problem and you need to go fix it because I said so.
Yeah, true.
But with the reveal of this royal family of Ghost World, I need basically Maya except as a ghost,
I'm
and
down.
not with absolutely no agency, and like I need Maya without all of the problems that Maya's character had, except also a ghost. And just to come in and mess with stuff, I actually kind of want her to not be evil and to also have just kind of not been aware of what Alan and his brother have been up to, and to just kind of walk in toward the end of the series being like, what have you kids been up to? You clean up this mess, and then you are all grounded. You cannot mess with the balance between the living and the dead. Stop that.
Mm. Oh, yeah, and then there's the other thing too. Have you guys heard anything about the third rider?
Nope.
I know, like, I've seen the design. That's about it.
I know absolutely nothing. Because I pretty much avoid that sort of thing at this point.
Okay, well, I've seen the design, but this time not because nobody tags spoilers on the Kamen Rider tag, though it partly is because of it. But this time it's because Tumblr Mobile does that recommended posts thing. So now I have. So
Tumblr!
It's like, even if I'm, so it's like, even if I'm trying to avoid the tag, I still get sued as no. It's like you can't win. Now I see the design and it's like, it's a nice design, but if you know anything about what that guy, or is that even a guy? I don't know. Don't tell me, because I still want to live in that Schrodinger's cat hope that maybe, you know? Like, we finally got Akari. Like, Akari is a good character, so maybe.
No, give it to Cannon. Cannon's already dead.
Yeah, that's right.
Give it to Cannon, because I don't want Akari to die.
Or hell, hey, I got an even wilder idea, which they probably will not do, but hey, we haven't seen Takeru's mom, right? So
you know what? We haven't.
That's
just have her walking in like, hey guys, guess who's been ghost hunting for the past 10 years? Hey Takeru, where's your dad? About that.
Oh, that would explain why I thought I saw him in that vision one time. Boy, I feel really bad about banishing him. Oops.
Yeah, man. Probably should have listened to what he was trying to tell me. Oh, well. He was still a ghost, so I did what I had to.
Now, that does bring us to the end of our first portion of the show.
If there's her and Ghost Mom, we could have a mom fight.
Yeah. Oh man, speaking
because
of
that's literally all I want in the world anymore.
Oh man, speaking of superhero moms, okay, have you seen Ultraman X? Have you been watching Ultraman X?
Yes.
Sono, please. Oh man, the last episode, well actually the episode before the last one. Oh man.
Is it mom time? Am I gonna have to invest it in more moms?
Yes.
Oh yes.
Time for me to go live in mom hell.
Find the Ultraman Nexus episode.
Oh my god. Oh my god. It's like you watch that episode and you go to Toei and you're just like, why aren't you doing
this everywhere?
Yeah.
God, we've got a lot of stuff to answer.
Yeah. Oh, man. But yeah, Ultraman X. It's a really great show.
You need
to watch it. It's so good. It's probably the best toku show that's running right now. So, yeah.
I'm saying something. Ghost is really good.
Yeah. Well, yeah, yeah.
But,
Ultraman X. Oh, man. Oh, man.
I mostly bring up the ending of the first part, because Cannibal, I know it's got to be about 3:30 in the a.m. out there, and if you want to fob off for this part, you're welcome to.
I'll probably be for a little while, and let's see what happens.
All right.
There's a lot here, so...
I can see that. Oh, my God.
This is the listener participation part. Of our program, wherein we ask you, the listeners, to offer your thoughts, comments, and questions about Kamen Rider Ghost episodes 9 and 10. First off, bones to pick. What issues did you have, and why? Now, first off, Jason answers, my issues are less with these particular episodes and more with continuing issues as a whole, such as Sage becoming less helpful and funny, and the Spider-Lantern taking the place of the Shiranui. Aside from some confusion in regards to the timeline, at the beginning of episode 9, Takeru says he has 16 days left to gather the icons, yet in episode 10 he says he has 22. These episodes were pretty much perfect.
Yeah.
Sage does have this problem that Keeper in Dino Charge has, where I keep forgetting that they're a thing that are happening in the show. Like, they're a major vital factor to the show, but I keep completely forgetting about their existence because they don't do anything and are missing for, like, 2 to 3 episodes at a time.
Yeah. And, but this is basically how we felt about this show so far, so, yeah.
Stargear commented, yeah. Ryu Tenkuji, while it's nice that he's a constant presence, he seems to be an amazing man and father, he's kind of one note. He's constantly shown saying the same thing over and over, and while his message is a great message, I would like to dig a little deeper into his character. Although I'm not sure how to go about that without overusing him, because his short flashback moments are just the right amount of time with him. I feel like we have gotten kind of more bits about his character, especially through Sionji, who's walking around being like, hey man, F you. Like, clearly he did something to Sionji at some point. And you've got these kind of flashbacks with him and Makoto where he's got this, like, he has a son. So why does he have this kind of father-son relationship with this other kid? Like, I think there's a bit more to him than things let on, and we're given clues to that. It's just we're not outright saying things, which is nice, because I like us not outright saying everything.
Although, this kind of does come back to my fears that with the whole, like, that whole Movie Wars film with Ghost's dad, like, I hope they don't lock that whole thing out within just, like, it only shows up in the movie, and then just we are like, we're just lost if you don't see it.
Yeah, I mean, that would be a problem, but I mean, I want to trust them, because they've given me no reason not to, whereas I was a lot more hostile with Drive over that, because Drive was giving me no reason to trust it. But I want to believe in Ghost, because it seems like it knows what it's doing.
Yeah. And Swirly Jiffy said, why did Igarashi have a fan from Benkei? The people who had the artifacts we saw get turned into the other icons respected the historical figure the object represented or was related to them somehow.
Well, I mean, he had it was more the saying on the fan. I feel like the fan was probably given to him by Ryu.
Yeah, they never said it was, like, literally, like, Benkei's fan, because I'm pretty sure that would not be that easily accessible if it were, so.
Yeah, on the fan was what was from Benkei.
Robin Hood's bow. Robin Hood's not a real dude.
Yeah, but they definitely made a point of saying, like, the saying on the fan was what was from Benkei.
Yeah.
And that the fan was just the object it was on. And again, I feel like it was probably something that Ryu gave him.
Yeah. And honestly, at least I hope it is, because it does kind of start to get really weird if we are like with every icon, we're just going to somehow this guy or somehow just manage to find this priceless 1,000-year-old artifact of this super famous historical guy or woman.
Look, I'm just glad it didn't come from Sionji's garage this time.
Yeah, that's true. Oh my god, that might explain.
That's a problem I've been having.
That might explain the Robin Hood bow, though. Like, it could literally just be something he found from the garage and it's like.
Well, that was at a museum. The Robin Hood bow was from a museum, but, like, the Billy the Kid and Beethoven, he just shows up with these things. It's like, oh no, these are definitely real. I definitely have all of these real artifacts from these famous people that are definitely worth, like, hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not millions of dollars. But I'll just, you know, I just have it here.
Yeah.
From somewhere.
Yeah.
No big deal.
I mean, I think it would just be much better if they... I think it's just better to imagine that they aren't the literal thing, and it's more about the thought, because otherwise it becomes really weird. I mean, even, like, the icons, the ghost icon, like, the spirit things themselves, the hoodie ghosts themselves, they don't seem like they are the literal, like, representations of whoever they rep, whoever they are. So, you know, just do that. It doesn't have to be the literal, like, the first light bulb Edison ever made, because I'm pretty sure that would not be in the hands of some weird-ass Japanese scientist.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's, like, in a museum in New Jersey.
Yeah. Also, Swirly Jiffy said, "It bugs me that I feel like Akari and Onarian have become less important as these episodes go on. Akari's Shiranui machine is no longer needed now that we have Spider Lantern, and Onari hasn't used any of his mystic knowledge. They are just as much main characters as Takeru and Makoto, so, you know."
I disagree. I mean, look at all Akari has done in the past couple of episodes.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, she hasn't outright been doing the science. I mean, she has outright been doing the science, but it hasn't been used to solve problems. But we're getting more out of her character than just she does the science.
Yeah, she's really seriously getting involved with the drama that's happening.
This affects relationships that she has, so she's stepping into it. And I mean, Onari is doing things. He got Billy the Kid back. Mm. I mean, I would love to see more done with Onari, because I feel like of all of them, he's getting the short end of the stick. But I don't feel like they're becoming less important.
Yeah, well, on the other hand, like, he's getting the short end of the stick largely because they're letting Akari step up.
Which, yeah.
Look, in the
aggregate, if one of them has to get the short end of the stick, I'm glad it's not Akari.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, I really hope, though, that as time goes on, he does get a couple good moments.
Yeah. Maybe, even if it's just like, you know, even like, what's a good example? Oh, God, I've come back to Blade again, but, you know, like Kotaro from Blade.
Now I'm thinking about Kotaro.
Yeah.
I love Kotaro.
Now, speaking of great moments with characters, we move now to the great woe-ments, wherein our listeners told us some of their favorite things in these episodes. Jason answered, "Seeing Akari try to sacrifice herself to protect Takeru, as well as her talk with Makoto, really showed how much she cares about the two of them and has basically cemented her as my favorite character. Jason, you have good taste."
She is the best.
Mm.
Cannon saying that she doesn't want to come back to life because she wants her brother to be happy, and she knows that he isn't happy about having to fight his friends, as well as her pointing out that he's changed. It showed that she isn't as weak as the small glimpses of her we've gotten have made her seem. Her soul appearing for a moment to protect both Akari and Takeru just further cements how strong she is.
Cannon is so good.
She really is.
We don't deserve Cannon and Akari. We don't. We are not worthy.
I sort of feel like
it's... But they're the characters we need.
Yeah, I feel like that's Toei, honestly, like, just starting to be like, oh, hey, guys, sorry about the last couple of years.
Sorry about all of it.
It's either Toei or it's like the writer looking back on the last two shows like, oh no.
It's like, this is not how you do this. Let's fix this right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jason's third moment, Takeru and Makoto's gunfight standoff on the bridge. It was just an overall cool fight to watch, even if it didn't last long. And I was right there with, like, I really enjoyed that. It's like handgun versus rifle. I was excited. And finally, seeing that both Sionji and Aran's plans are going along smoothly, it's nice to see that even the villains are losing fights, that they are, but are still managing to get things done.
That is nice, because it's like, last season was like, you guys are losing. You guys are dying every week. Why are you not changing your plans?
Yeah.
Whereas this, it's like, oh, well, you're losing, but you're, like, winning isn't exactly part of your plan. You're not trying to, you know, survive.
Yeah.
I still like Sionji just being like, oh, okay, so Sweater the Kid is going to do his thing now? All right, well, that's not according to my plan, but that doesn't hurt me any. Cool.
But, you know, all the icons are here, so, you know, that's all I really needed.
Oh, wait, hold on. I don't hear anyone anymore.
Oh, no, we're still
here. I'm here.
Okay, okay.
I'll do Star Gear. Star Gears were, one, anytime Benkei was used. I love the fighting style and the effect it seemingly has on Takeru. Whenever he uses it, his body language changes into a more strong and confident person, though this is probably related to Takeru becoming a stronger and more confident person himself, but it's also really good suit, but I'm adding this, it's also really good suit acting.
It, look, Takeru Seiji, the man knows what he's doing.
Yes.
He really is, especially on Kamen Rider at least, the guy who brings the acting into suit acting.
Indeed.
We will always... okay, whatever.
Does anyone know offhand who was Gokai Green?
I do not.
Because that was some suit acting.
Oh, yeah.
Whoever was in the Gokai Green suit was on it. Star Gear's other was Cannon's Will projecting an image of herself to stop Makoto from attacking. Or it could possibly be Makoto subconsciously projecting her image as a means to stop himself and accept his sister's wishes. But I like the idea of Cannon having a proactive ability, so I'm hoping for it to be my initial thought. It does seem to literally be Cannon.
It does.
I there's nothing indicating that it isn't, and Cannon seems to have reacted to having done it.
Mm.
So I definitely think it's Cannon, just she gets angry enough and she wants to make a point and she can bring herself out for a second to be like, nope, no, stop it.
Yeah. And Swirly Jiffy said, I like that they're giving King Tutform some love. Yeah, he really needed some love, given how, you know, the real life person was like.
Look, it's and really
he had a tough life.
Yeah. I'll read the name Javert like that every time.
That's the best way to read it, though.
Yeah, exactly. Javert showing up and snarking at the writers before he brutalizes them. He might be the villain I care the most about at this point.
That's legit, though. He's pretty styling.
I can't take him seriously. I can't do it. Have you looked at the Geki Ranger screen caps?
Oh wait, I forgot to look at them. Oh man, but now that you reminded them, now I have to look at them.
Yeah, no, look at this. I can't.
Somehow the link isn't showing up on the Skype chat on the mobile.
I will link it again.
Wait, hold on. How does this... It has not shown anything on the text chat. That's odd.
Huh.
I'll have to deal with it eventually, but just not today. Okay.
Skype is trying to protect you. I will get this out.
Oh no. Okay, so Swirly Jiffy also said, I really loved the speech Ryu gave to Makoto in that flashback. It's a shame that he doesn't show up more. He seems like a cool dad. Yeah.
Yeah. Where are Makoto and Kanon's parents, by the way?
In mourning?
I...
Like, maybe that, maybe after their two kids disappeared, they just moved away, because... Who needs to
yeah.
Oh my god, that would be so great. That would be so great if that's like what they do.
I feel like that's something we kind of need to address.
Yeah.
Is where is their family?
Well, then you look, we'll get to it.
They're we've still got plenty of time.
Yeah. They're probably gonna go with the orphan thing, most likely, but I kinda hope that we kinda do. I hope that their family is alive, but they just went on with their lives thinking that Makoto and Kanon were dead, and then they have to, like, when they come back, they have to deal with that. That'd be great. That'd be amazing.
I feel like, yeah, all I can think of is Flight of the Navigator, but that's not actually...
All I can think of is the end of Tokuger, where they all came back to their parents.
Don't, I'm gonna cry. Stop.
And they were like, we know we're all adults now, and that's weird because we were like 8, but we still, and the parents, like, we still love you. You're still our children.
That's so good. Alright, I'm gonna, moving on before I get all overwhelmed. On icons, how much do our listeners like the Benkei icon? Jason answered, it's okay. I don't have much of an opinion of it, because we didn't get to see much of it. The spider lantern connecting to Takeru's weapon when it's used does look ugly, though, and I'm right there with you, Jason.
It's not the best.
Mm.
Stargear commented, I love the powerful yet quick and graceful fighting style. The weapon is really silly, though. Throwing a spider lantern onto the end of a blade of a sword and calling it a hammer does not make it a hammer. But it gets the job done.
Honestly, the weapons in this show is like the one weak design, like the one weak link, because I don't know. But
if that's the biggest complaint we have.
Yeah, yeah. It's better the weapons than the suits, right?
Yeah.
The belt is still terrible, but I mean, if my biggest complaints are aesthetic, then I feel like that's not that big of a deal.
Yeah. Yeah. But still, that sword, man, it's a paddle. It doesn't look like a sword. But anyway. Swirly Jiffy said, I like the Benkei suit, but I don't like the weapon. I get that they're trying to represent his two favorite weapons, but they could have easily had the spider clamp together at the end of the Gengan Saber. Is that what it's called? Gengan
Apparently,
Saber?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, God. Okay, and now that awkwardly sit on the side, does it even turn into a gun? I don't know.
No, yeah. It turns into a gun.
Yeah, for Billy the Kid.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. I get lost by all these guns that turn into swords.
The thing is that Ryder doesn't usually have them as one weapon. That's more of a Sentai thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Where it can kind of modulate between the two. Usually Ryder has them separate.
Although not recently they've been kind of the same thing. Like, Wizard's like the sword gun thing. And
yeah,
the guy's
Wizard
like,
has it.
And the guy's like weird pistol sword. I still don't get that. Yeah, I don't think even the show remembers, but
I only remember him having like the orange slice sword, which was definitely not a gun.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh yeah, but no, he had the swords with the guns for the grips.
Yeah, he had
the
other sword.
Just giant sword sticking out the top.
Yeah. That's ridiculous.
Yes,
but
it is.
Yeah,
look,
Ryder
nothing's more ridiculous than the turntable cannon.
But that's ridiculous in the best possible way.
It really is.
And I wish that hadn't happened at the point at which I started to absolutely loathe the show, because I would have liked time to appreciate it. But I
still
didn't get it.
Now that we mention weapons, I still kind of get reminded of the final fight between Ryder 1 and Gaim, and it's just like Gaim is using two swords, yet
and Rider One's using nothing. Yet Rider One is still like fight on an even ground and successfully blocking all.
Well, that's because Skyme is useless.
Yeah.
And also because
Coates is a useless human being.
And that's because Rider One, like they got Fujioka in to play Hongo, and it's like, nah, sorry, look, like you're a nice kid, Gakusano. You are athletic as all get out.
You're not a cultural icon.
Well, he's not a cultural icon, and look, like, I don't actually know how badass Fujioka is. Like, I would never want to
try. Oh my god,
I'm told he's still pretty hardcore. Just his charisma alone, like, you can't beat him.
Oh man, Fujioka's, like, his real life, like, what he does real life, it is absurd. It's just like he does every sort of, like, he has like I think like several licenses, which are like jeep riding, helicopter, motorcycle, and it's like, and he's like, you should look it up some point. It is just amazing what he does, like, as like on the background, because man,
yeah,
Hiroshi Fujioka.
We gotta keep moving though, because I'm getting really hungry.
Yes. So, is Benkei the first icon to have two different versions of the finisher? Jason answered, "It's more like two different finishers altogether, rather than two different versions of the same. I think this is the first time this has happened, but I can't be completely sure about that."
Stargear commented, "Edison had the charged shot and an electrified rider kick."
Did he? I don't remember.
Apparently.
I feel like I would remember
that sort of thing. If someone says it happened, I'm willing to believe it happened, because I don't think they'd comment into the show and just make that up.
Yeah, that's true. Oh man, I need to look that up.
I mean, if they have, congratulations, Stargear, you got one over on us. But I mean, yeah. I believe you're telling me the truth.
And Swirly Jiffy said, "No, Robin Hood also had two finishers as well. Every form seems to have a weapon finisher and a form finisher."
Oh, okay, that would actually make sense.
Yeah.
Good call on that, Swirly Jiffy.
Although I still kind of like my idea that Benkei, because he's like this weapon master, he just, because he has so many weapons, he just also has more finishers than the other ones.
I'd be down.
I still kind of like that idea, but, you know, if that's how it is, it's okay. Now we know.
We do. Now then, where do you think Makoto got those other icons? Did he have to let people die to get them, like Takaru could have done with Mari and the Robin Hood icon? To which Jason answered, "I don't have a clue where Makoto got his icons from, and while it would be nice to find out, I don't think it matters in the long run. He probably didn't let people die, though. Kanon wouldn't want that. And while she has been shown to be willing to ignore him, I don't think he's telling the truth when he claims he'd do anything to bring her back." Which is about where we were at.
Yeah. He's the king of bad decisions right now, but I don't think his bad decisions include murder. Stargear commented, I don't think so. If him looking up to Ryu when he was younger is anything to go by and wanting to follow in his footsteps, then maybe he was taught the same technique as Takeru to unseal the spirits. Plus, I believe Kanon would be far beyond worrying about him becoming a bad person just to revive her. She would probably have said something in more detail regarding him actively letting people die and or killing them. He may be keeping this all from her, which would be really sad. But I'm not sure if he could keep it from her, because she literally lives in his pocket.
Yeah.
And she is an eyeball. All she's capable of doing is seeing things.
"I see, but I can never close these eyes. I've seen so much. I've seen too much."
I feel like if he had killed people, she would definitely have noticed.
"I have seen everything." Anyway. Swirly Jiffy said, "I'm not sure how Makoto got those icons. Maybe this
Yanma royal family that we are learning about helped him make them. Could be. Most likely, actually.
Now, Javert says that Makoto acting for a personal reason is treason.
Hold on. It's 4 a.m. over here, and I'm probably going to go to bed soon. And
right.
Can we do the questions the listeners have?
Yes, absolutely.
For
fast forward.
Before
leaving. And then we'll go back.
Okay.
That is around the end of page 25. So just so you can find where it is.
Zupaida commented, I think Makoto has done some bad things to get those icons. He's most likely been working with this royal family to get the powers and information to hunt icons. Maybe Sage is similar to them, or directly related by blood. Ghost blood.
I am always really confused as to how families work among dead people. That was a thing in Bleach that I was very confused by, where, like, Byakuya has parents. I'm like, how do you have a noble family among this land of dead people? Like, how does that work?
I'm sorry, those were just comments. Here are the questions from the audience.
But where is it?
We're going down a little further.
Yeah, just a little further.
Okay. Never mind.
Okay.
Yeah, there we go.
Questions
from the audience.
Yes. Now, Jason said, I have some questions for you, but ignore them if they were already answered or if there are too many. The first question, what would you change about these two episodes, if anything, and why?
I would address that Shiranui thing. And I would probably stick Captain Ghost in there somewhere, just for funsies, because I love him. I love him! I love you, Hoodie Iguana!
I think that's really about I can't, except for the Shiranui, I can't really think of much.
Neither can I, really.
All right. Well, then, question two. Realistically, how do you want this first arc to end?
Well, I want it to end well.
Yeah. Personally, I want Ghost Mom to show up and start yelling at people, but I don't even have anything to indicate Ghost Mom is real. That's just my wishful thinking. I do want Takeru to sacrifice himself for canon, and I want that to kind of be what this kind of catalyst for Makoto to be like, oh, I've been a huge bag of dicks. Okay, I'm going to calm down a bit, and now we're going to help Takeru.
Yeah, I like that. Again, the only thing I want is confirmation that the Ghost Empire are trying to colonize the world of the living. Just because, you know, colonialism is really evil.
And, it's a terrible thing.
Yeah, it really is. Like, you know, as a beneficiary of it, like, you know, I'm not going to pretend I don't. I come from America. I'm a white guy from America.
I'm the descendant of the people that was part, that was, had been colonized, so, you know.
Yeah, you know.
I have the privilege of colonialism, but it's still bad.
It helped me out a whole bunch. It's still awful. Let's not do that ever again. And we should definitely teach the children that it is evil and a thing that only bad people do.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, question three. Do you think Takeru will wish to bring canon back, even though she says she does not want to come back? And if he did, how would you feel about that? Or do you expect him to wish himself back?
I don't think it's that she just doesn't want to come back in general. She just doesn't want Makoto doing terrible things and is basically trying to use herself as a threat.
Yeah.
So I don't think she would be opposed to coming back by any means.
Oh, no. Just that, you know, she doesn't want to kill anyone else in the process.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think she would maybe put up an argument being like, no, you should save yourself. But I do think that I mean, like I said, I'm hoping Takeru will wish to bring her back, and then that Makoto will use his wish to save Takeru.
Mm. It's like the sort of thing that was said in like recent Doctor Who. If you are the one being interrogated, you are the most important person in that room.
I like that. Now, question 4. What kind of things do you want or expect to see in the next arc, which may or may not be dependent on your answer to the last question?
I want a Ghost Queen. I want a Ghost Queen just showing up and doing stuff. I don't care what she does. I just want her to be awesome. And I think that would be a good lady villain. Yeah. But I'd also like her to be kind of a weird third party like Sionji has been. Where you've got her sons off doing one thing, you've got Sage and the Ghost Kids off doing another thing, and she's like, okay, how can I have fun with this? But I also want her to ground, I also want her to ground everyone. Yeah. I also want her to show up and be like, you're all grounded for a week. No dessert, no TV.
Yeah, classical sort of writer villain politics. Those are the best ones. And what I would want to see, well, like I already used my being good, so I don't know what I want to see actually at this point. Maybe a female writer, but that's like the sort of like underlying hope.
We always want a female writer.
Yeah, so you know that's like I don't know. You know, I just want it to be really a good show.
Yeah, I'm kind of right there with you.
Yeah, there's a lot. I mean, as long as it's good, I'll accept anything.
Mm. But definitely having more women characters would be nice.
Yeah,
just overall.
I really want a lady villain. I like having a woman on both sides. I think that opens up a lot of different traits and ways to use your lady characters.
Yeah.
And finally,
we were getting medic right around this time last year, so you know, just putting that out there.
Isn't this also around the time when the hints of the secondary, well, in this case the third writer starts showing up?
Well, I mean, we got Go in episode 12. So
yeah. Although Go was even early for a secondary rider, not that you.
Yeah, no. Like, Go was pretty early, but I want more ladies.
Yeah.
And finally, Stargear commented, "All of my questions involved your theories on this Royal Gamma family and how you think they will play a bigger part in the story once the initial plot line presumably ends next episode. Also, if you had to rank Ghost among the other writers and their first batch of 10 or so episodes, where would it rank? How well do you think it's doing in comparison to other writers' setup?"
Let's do the theories first.
Yeah, I mean, my theories are pretty much, you know, Ghost Queen Mom. I mean, it's definitely, I think the next part of the story is definitely going to involve, a lot of them and finding out why Alan kind of has this separation from his brother, what he's up to. Maybe he doesn't quite want what his brother wants. I don't know.
Gamma aristocracy, you know?
Yeah, surprisingly, Go Onger had this really heavy underlying political plot in its villains, where our main villains of the show were trying to escape a horrible, corrupt dictatorship, and that's why they were trying to colonize the human world. That was a really weird, interesting twist, and I'm wondering if it's going to be something like that.
Wasn't like one of those villains is like, wasn't like his dad?
Yes.
The final villain. Yes.
Yes, his dad was the final villain, and also a thing we found out at one point is it had previously been a, like, not a monarchy, but there were, it possibly a sort of feudal thing. But the female villain had been a princess of some kind and had refused an arranged marriage, and that completely destroyed their entire political system and caused this dictatorship.
Oh my god.
That's amazing.
Go Onger just does whatever, and I wish there had been more to that, but they only really go into that over the course of one or two episodes, because they bring back the dude she was engaged to, and she's like, this is the worst! And he's dying, and he asks her to help, and she's like, I have this thing that could help you. I'm gonna destroy it and walk away as you explode.
Oh man.
She is the absolute best and is my favorite lady villain of all time. Please watch Go Onger and enjoy her absolute majesty.
Literal majesty, this case.
Yeah. I mean, she was also in a couple episodes of Garo. If you may recognize the actress. She was in, I don't know the plot of the episode she was in the first season, but she was in the third one when Rian and What's-His-Face go to the horror brothel. She was the leader of the horror brothel.
Wait, third episode?
No, third season.
Okay, because I haven't watched, I don't really watch Garo, but I have at least watched like the first four episodes, and I don't remember
She's in the first season in a similar episode, but I'm not sure what episode it is.
Okay.
But it's the 11th episode of the third season that she's in. One of only like two episodes of Garo that I've seen, but she is amazing in Go Onger. But on back to important things, because I will talk about her for 8 years if no one shuts me.
Yeah. So, ranking Ghost among the other writers and their first patch of 10 episodes, that's actually a really difficult question.
It really is.
I'd rank it pretty high, though.
Oh, yeah.
Because it knows what it's doing, but I don't think I could give a solid place or who it's kind of above and below.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's certainly better than, like, the last show.
Oh, well.
It's definitely better than, like, Drive and Gaim. Maybe even Wizard. I mean, Wizard has a solid first handful of episodes, but I don't think they got quite as much done as Ghost is getting done.
Honestly, I think I think this is actually better than Neo Heisei show.
I'd put Forze above it.
Yeah.
Just because Forze had an amazing.
Forze does come out the gate swinging.
Yeah, well, I mean, the setup of the first 10 episodes of Forze is, we're going to directly do something with each of our main characters.
Yeah, that's true.
So I think that's very, very solid and very, kind of very cohesive and does. I really love those first handful of episodes of Forze, so I might put that above these, but definitely every other, aside from Forze, post-Decade Heisei.
Yeah, because,
I mean, I don't remember the first 10 episodes of Double and O's very well, but I can almost assuredly say this is better.
I can say that I remember somewhat of the Double episode. I remember that there was nothing really that interesting happening in Double until, like, the virus dopant was, like, episode 15 or something.
A lot of interesting stuff in the beginning of Double.
Well,
a lot of foreshadowing about Philip and the Sonozakis.
Okay, not interesting things. The show didn't really get good until, like,
you.
After. Well,
for
I
you.
Don't know how.
I think in the sense that, what's the name of that writer? I was so angry at him all through Drive.
Mm-hmm.
The head writer on Double just does
oh,
not...
Oh, Sanjo?
Yeah, Sanjo, thank you. He does not seem to really like putting the pedal to the metal from word go. Like,
I'm going to put this out there, is that the Sonozaki stuff starts in episode 3.
It does, but it doesn't become as important in the same way as a lot of Takeru's stuff is getting.
It doesn't. I'm not saying it does, but no. I'm not saying that I don't believe that the first 10 episodes of Double are uninteresting.
I think that is an unfair thing of me to say. That's fair. Uninteresting. I just don't think they go as hard.
If it doesn't work for you, that's fine.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's fair to say this in general is uninteresting.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. That's a much more accurate way to say it.
I think, I was going to say, I think aside from, like, Neo, I think if, like, outside of Neo Heisei shows, like, considering, even if we don't go to, like, as far back as Showa, because that would just...
Showa doesn't do this, though. Showa just does whatever it wants, and it all comes together when it feels like it. Like, the first 10 episodes of a Showa don't need to connect to each other.
Yeah, although they still kind... Although there is still sort of, like,
There's an overarching plot in them, but they don't need to be this big cohesive thing that things have become in Heisei and post-Heisei.
In terms
the format
of,
like, of the show was very different.
Yeah, in terms of, like, overarching plot, it's different. I'm thinking more in general, like as in, like, establishing the show's, like, the style and the, you know, the tone and what to expect. I'm thinking of that kind of, I'm thinking in, you know, that sort of way about, like, if we consider Showa writers too. But I'm not gonna go that far yet, because then the list would expand to, like...
I think really Forze and Kuga are the only ones that I can really, off the top of my head, put up against Ghost.
Yeah, me too. Like from early Heisei shows...
Kuga wasted no time.
Kuga
did not have any time to mess around, that is for sure.
It did not. But Kuga was, like, literally, like, the first writer show in 10 years, so it better not waste around.
I wouldn't put Agito up there, though, because for the first handful of episodes of Agito, Agito doesn't actually do anything. It's really the G3 show for the first, like, 5 or 6 episodes.
Yeah, it was still kind of going with the whole,
Agito does this kind of thing where it sets up the three stories individually and then brings them together.
Yeah,
so you've got this G3 arc, you've got this Agito arc, and then you've got this Gills arc, and then you start getting into the combined story. Ryuki? I think we were getting to the end of Tezuka around episode 10?
Yeah, Ryuki I love it. I love Ryuki. It does not go as hard.
Well, Fize? I mean, Fize is a mess. I love Fize. It's a mess.
It is a train wreck.
And we don't even have Kusaka by this point in Fize.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he's really what starts driving Fize forward. The first 10 episodes of Blade are a pacing nightmare, so no.
I actually quite like the first half of Blade, but yeah.
First half of Blade, but it's a pacing nightmare.
Yeah. And,
Hibiki
had a completely different thing, though.
Hibiki had its own thing going, so it's kind of hard to compare.
I don't think it compares well at all. That said.
Kabuto.
I'd not rank Kabuto
I wouldn't put Kabuto up against Ghost. Denno.
I have no idea about Denno since I haven't watched
it. I don't think I'd put Denno up against this, because at this point I don't think we had
I think Denno is in Hibiki category.
You've got this B plot with Xehanort that is present but hasn't started yet at this point. So I don't think I'd really put it up there. Kiva, the first Kiva's handful of episodes show. Of Kiva are actually really solid and are a lot more solid. Like, Kiva becomes a lot less solid as it goes on.
That's very true, yeah.
But I think the first 10 episodes of Kiva are really when it used its non-linear format the best.
Mm.
I think that was really kind of the top of its game.
Mm.
But I don't think that's a good job in setting up its premise, because then it all falls apart.
Mm.
And then Decade happens. And
the
first 10 episodes of Decade are good, because that's when Aizawa was still there. Mm. And then he left. So, I mean, Ghost is definitely up there, I think, in terms of starting off a show. I think it's really like Kuga, Forze, and Ghost leading back.
Pretty much, actually. Let's hope the Ghost will have as good of an ending as Kuga, though.
Oh, well, maybe not. So
and Forze.
Episode
46 of Forze was terrible. I'm never letting that one go. That was the worst idea anyone has ever had.
Which one? What happened in that episode?
It was the Tachibana thing.
It's the
whole Tachibana thing. I want to call him Tachibana because of Blade. It was the whole Hayami thing.
Yeah, okay.
Which was the dumbest idea, and I'm angry at everyone.
Oh, man.
I'm never letting that go.
Yeah. Oh, man, Rider finales, that make a whole other episode in of itself.
That'd be a good Rider jump.
Blade is the best. Blade is the best finale. Kuga's in its own category, you can't even count.
Yeah, pretty much. Although then again, I feel like Ryder, I think, was it Gomez that said it before, that Ryder doesn't really have that great of a final, doesn't tend to have the greatest endings, and
generally, but then there's Kamen Rider Blade.
Yeah, there's always...
Ryuki's ending is also pretty solid.
Ryuki, it's three endings.
I like Ryuki. I like the things that happen in the last couple episodes of Ryuki. Mm.
But I like before we, like, because this is quickly spinning out of control.
Wait. The ending final. The endings for Kamen Rider Black and Stronger were really good, especially Black's worst. Like, it's kind of set the it's. Black's ending, it's basically like the ancestor to, like, the Blade's ending. It's really good.
The ending of Amazon makes literally no sense, and all that Amazon hates everyone he's had to spend the past, like, 30 episodes with.
Oh, yeah.
He gets on a suit, gets on a boat, the kid asks if he'll ever see him again, Amazon gives him the most disgusted look I've ever seen. Says nothing and gets on the boat.
Oh my god, I forgot about that. Oh my god.
Amazon's ending is amazing. He hates all of them.
Oh man. Let me think. Well, Showa Riders didn't really... At least, like, around that time, really didn't focus on the endings that much. Well, V3 actually had a pretty decent ending, but it also left a lot of things... The thing with Showa Riders, the first, like, the ones up to Stronger, they kind of went with this thing where, like, the Stronger was gonna be, like, the big finale that was gonna tie up all the other ones, so the previous ones kind of just ended with, oh... V3 is gonna ride into the sunset, and he will fight on another day, fight on somewhere else. And
Amazon just gets on the boat.
Yeah, pretty much. Oh man.
But that's our questions from the audience.
And if Cannibal, if you want to head to bed, we can
clear up the rest of this.
Good night, or whatever time it is over there, and sleep well, hopefully, and all that good stuff. Bye-bye.
You too. Have a good one. Javert says that Makoto acting for personal reasons is treason. What ties do you think Makoto has to Aran's family, and to what degree do you think Aran is acting regarding Makoto? Is Aran covering for Makoto, or does he really have his own agenda? To which Jason answered, I think Makoto's ties are just what we've been told, that he's best friends with Aran. He may have been raised by them and owe them a debt, but that hasn't been shown, and it's just a theory of mine at this point. And it should be pointed out of many of the cast here at Uncommon Cast RX, Jason.
Yes, this seems to also be our theory.
Yeah. While I do believe that Aran has his own agenda that clearly isn't stopping him from... While I do believe that Aran has his own agenda that clearly isn't stopping him from being Makoto's best friend and letting him do what he wants. Which, yeah.
Yeah.
I really just do want Aran to think, like, oh yeah, Makoto, you're my best friend, man. And Makoto just being like, boy, that's really sad.
Being like, man, I'm just here to save my sister, dude.
Yeah, okay,
I don't
so
care
I'm your
what
best
you
friend.
Think.
Whew, sucks. You need better taste, boy.
I mean, I do think that's a really interesting parallel because he's also Takeru's best friend.
And he's about as good a friend to both, but in fairness, he seems to think that everyone's been about the same kind of friend to him, so.
Yeah. Stargear commented, I think that once Makoto and Kanon were pulled into the Ganma world, that Alan and his family maybe somewhat adopted them, which is how they were able to survive in another dimension. But it was more for the sake of being young Alan's playthings or pets. So Alan cares for Makoto, but in a very manipulating way, in which he always feels superior, or that he is the owner. Which is why I think Alan is so upset with Takeru's influence over him. Makoto was Alan's special friend, pet, plaything, and he despises Takeru for stepping in on that. So he definitely has his own agenda, but he also has this very weird soft spot involving Makoto. That's an interesting angle.
I could see it, though. I mean, and it certainly would play into the fact that, you know, well, not the fact, the theory, at this point, only a theory, that the dead are colonialists and are therefore keeping the living as pets. And curiosity.
Yeah, I mean, it does kind of feed into how Alan acts towards Makoto. Because he's not like all buddy-buddy with him. He's just like, oh, you want to do this thing? That's cute. Okay, you go do that thing.
Also, give me the icon that is this thing you have been working hard to collect for your sister's soul. Give it to me.
Give that to me, and I'm gonna go do my thing. And I don't promise that I'll give it back, but maybe. That's definitely an angle that I like.
Yeah, I'm definitely down for that. And finally, Swirly Jiffy said, I think that Makoto made some sort of deal with the Ganma to escape their world, potentially in exchange for his sister, which is why she's in a Ganma icon right now. It could be that Aran Alan gave Makoto the Spectre powers as some odd form of pity. I like this as well.
There are a lot of interesting things we're bringing in here.
I'm
very excited to see what happens.
I'm actually, in my head, I'm going to spin this one around a little, because I like the idea that the reason, you know, Kanon is the one who said, no, look, Makoto, you're going to get the icons to bring me back, so you guys, I'm going to pay the price of my corporeal form, and we're going to get out of dead world.
Yeah, I mean, I do. I do really like that. I do love Kanon being the badass.
Yeah.
Again, it's very much this Kekkai Sensen thing, where the main character and his sister are confronted by maybe the devil. It's kind of weird and unclear, but it's like, okay, I'll give one of you this power if for a sacrifice, and the sister's like, okay, well. Don't hurt my brother, you can use me as the sacrifice, just leave him alone, while he's, like, freaking out and crying. I like badass sisters.
They're really good. Now, moving us on to forcing perspective. Is Ghost sending mixed messages about the agency one has over their own life? Jason answers, not really. While it may seem contradictory, it isn't. Yes, we have control over our own lives, but the truth is that we also have very little control over how our lives affect others. We can control it to an extent, but not completely. Which, yeah, I mean, you gotta free yourself of that illusion of control, because believing you can control everything will drive you nutty or turn you into a massive toolbox.
Yeah. Swirly Jiffy said, I wouldn't say it is. What I gathered is that there's a moral in being self-sacrificing. You're not necessarily thinking about what the people who care about you and that you're sacrificing for want. Making yourself a martyr when people want you alive. Hmm. Which is how I feel about it, pretty much.
Yeah, I could see that. Now, is Ghost saying no to suicide with Taku realizing that he is not the only one with the right to value his life? Jason says, yes, and I think it's a good message to send, that one's life has value even if you don't see it yourself.
Stargear commented, I would like to think most things involving suicide would be saying no to suicide in some way or another. I would also like to think that.
Boy, a lot of things are not good at it.
Yeah. But wow, Ghost is a show that makes you think, which is great. That's all I can really say. It's such a complex situation that it's hard to think and be on one side wholeheartedly without stepping into Kanon and Takeru's shoes and having to weigh such heavy burdens and choices. I wouldn't say it is all one mixed message, given both of their messages are clear, given what they know and what they can actively do, given their situation from their perspective.
Yeah, and I actually think that level of complexity is one of the things that really keeps me on this show.
Yeah. I mean, they're making a story, and people are having difficulties that they have to confront.
Yeah, it's almost like you should tell a story when you have a 50-episode TV show to do. You should maybe think about telling a story about people and drama and conflict and hard choices, maybe. Maybe have someone work for a thing once. I don't know. Call me crazy.
Yeah.
Not bitter at all. Now, Swirly Jiffy said, I would just kind of repeat my point on the answer to the agency question. I believe it's commenting on the trope of heroes wanting to sacrifice themselves, often when it's not wanted.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, what do you think about Kanon saying she doesn't want to come back to life if Makoto will become a terrible person to make it happen? To which Stargear commented that she's such a caring and pure person that it hurts her that she is causing so much pain for others, and that is an amazing stance for such a young person to hold.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's...
I mean...
Kanon is amazing.
Kanon is tiny, but she's strong. Swirly Jiffy said, I appreciate Kanon standing up to her brother as much as a soul trapped inside a children's toy can, as it showed character growth for her and was the kick in the pants reality check that Makoto needed to see that his actions were toolish. I really love Kanon.
Yeah.
I love Kanon so much.
Like, look, if they make an icon toy that like, is pink...
Oh no, they're making a Kanon.
Oh, they are? Good.
She's in like a weird Ganma icon set.
Baller. They've got my money.
I need her. Yeah. She is, her and Akari are my favorites. And will remain as such until we get Ghost Mom. Which I am convincing myself is going to happen.
I'm glad you can do that, because like I wouldn't dare, because that's setting you up for just some pain.
I'm gonna keep lying
to myself.
But
until then, yeah, never underestimate the power of self-delusion.
Never underestimate my devotion to moms.
Oh. Now the flashback to Ryu and Igarashi's conversation in Ghost Number 9 made it look like they saw impending doom, and Ryu had to figure out had to assure Igarashi that they could somehow stop it. Takaru is just over 3 weeks left until he becomes completely dead and unable to act in the world. Especially with his decision to save Kanon first, Takaru has to assure Akari that he will be able to save himself too. Do you think the Tenkuchis have blind faith or confidence and a firm belief? And with whom does it play better? Jason answered, I honestly see no difference between blind faith and confidence or firm belief, because to me, they both mean the same thing. That said, they both play it pretty much the same, so I wouldn't say that it fits either of them better.
I'm gonna just kind of explain the difference between those two things. Blind faith is just being like, this is gonna work out. I have absolutely no indication that it's going to go one way or the other, but I think it's going to work out. I think we're going to win, just because. Whereas confidence is more, okay, I know what I can do. I know the extent of my strength and what I'm capable of, and I think I can accomplish this because I have reasons to believe that.
Yeah, I know I'm good at what I do. That's why this is going to work out, as opposed to, it'll work out.
Yeah, like, okay. Tendo Soji has confidence. Kazuraba Kota has blind faith when he gets a power-up.
That's, I like that. Oh, Tendo Soji.
Tendo Soji is nothing but like, confidence.
He's super obnoxious and you hate him, but he's never wrong. But he somehow sells being never wrong, which is a thing, Shinosuke in Drive never managed to do.
Yeah.
Because he was always right, but I hate him for it.
There was never any reason to believe that he was always right.
Yeah.
And it's weird because Tendo actually also is blind faith, because he's just, no, I am right and everything will go exactly as I want to because I am the sun.
His confidence is based on a silly thing that makes no sense, but it's based on something as opposed to just, it's going to work out because the universe is a good place.
Maybe a better example is Kenzaki is confidence, and Shuichi from Ryuki is blind faith.
Yeah.
Whereas he's just like, no, I'm going to fix it. Everything's going to be fine, and we're not all going to die. Where you have no reason to believe that, and that didn't work out very well for you.
Yeah, no. I think...
Whereas Kenzaki is more, these are the steps I can take to fix this. I have the means to take these steps. I can do this.
Yeah. I think those are some pretty good ways to lay that down.
Stargear commented, Ryu has blind faith in that the future is what it should be thought, is what should be thought about most, working hard for a better tomorrow. It is blind faith, but it's a faith that has led us as humans through time, and that was instilled in Takeru, to work hard as best he can to embody the spirit of a hero. But it is the backbone to his confidence and a firm belief.
I guess, I'll see that.
I'm not sure if I'd call that blind faith, though, because they have reasons to believe these things.
That's true.
So I'm still leaning more on confidence than blind faith.
I think I still go with like, if one of them has blind faith, it's going to be Takaru.
Yeah.
Because, look, he's got barely half a grasp of what's going on here, but thankfully he's got some friends.
Whereas that's true.
Ryu seemed to have his stuff pretty well figured out. But you know, we'll get to that as the series goes on. Swirly Jiffy said, I think it's a combination of blind faith and confidence. I'd say Takaru is showing more of it as we have gotten to see more of him than his father. But Ryu was correct now that his son can fight back against the monsters they were trying to stop. Ryu knows what's up.
Yeah, I definitely think Ryu knows a bit too much to have blind faith in anything.
Yeah. Especially since, like, he's met his son from the future in that movie.
Yeah, sure.
I don't know, like, there's just, like, that would be the only, like, connection I'd be okay with. Like, oh, this is why he can be so chill, because he knows the guy, he knows his kid turns out alright. So he can afford to spend more time. Oh, wait, no, it's the day he dies, isn't it? I don't know.
I have no idea what happens in this movie.
Whatever.
All I know about this movie is this shot of Kiriko showing her ring, and then I'm upset about it.
No, you don't know that. That's not a thing that happens.
No, but then that's Kiriko from the future. That's Kiriko from the future, and Kiriko from the present is going to be like, "No, you're arrested."
It's not a thing that's going to happen. You married him.
And then she's
no.
No.
Have you met him? Yeah, I married him. Yeah, have you met him?
It's like, I'm going to lock you in a cell, and I don't care what that does to you, but I'm going to not let this future happen.
Did you have a lot of fun on the day after the wedding? First day into the honeymoon when you're opening all the presents, and he's like, oh, well, that's that, and that's that, and that's that, and that's that, and Ota regifted that from when he got that from his ex-wife 3 years ago. Yeah, was that fun? I bet that was a load of fun. Huh? When he told you, when he, you know, you tried to dress all sexy and alluring and such for the honeymoon, and he told you what you were gonna put on? Not like in a creepy way, just like, oh yeah, I bet you're gonna do this and this and this. And you're just like, oh, I married him, and that was really smart of me, wasn't it?
Just, God, there are so many things about Kiriko and Shinosuke that don't make sense and that I don't like, and also that she considers him a brother.
Yeah, ew.
Like, that's creepy.
Yeah, not a little.
And uncomfortable, especially since she has an actual brother.
Who is even creepier.
Yeah.
Somehow even creepier than Shinosuke, which is, that's an accomplishment.
Listen, really, the only acceptable choice is Rina.
Yeah, or the robot. And
well, I mean, the robot is dead.
That's true, yeah. So, yeah, Rina. Let's see, anyone else? No? Yeah, Rina.
Rina!
Yeah.
There was the robot, but he got dead.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess.
And again, like, the robot's still kind of iffy.
I mean, I guess maybe she could marry Justice Hunter.
Yeah, she could marry.
But he's also living in a hole in the basement.
Yeah.
So
that's like long distance relationships. They're tough. They're really.
Yeah.
Tough.
So I mean, we there is Dimension Cab who can just portal their way out. But you know, whatever.
I like to think that the only reason to do that is like, hey. Dimension, come on out. You leave the hole in. I'm gonna drop a stink bomb because Krim lives in that hole.
Yes, we're all gonna get out of the hole and then just like drop all our trash in there.
Yeah. Well, they already did drop all their trash in there.
Krim is well. No, Go isn't in there.
Oh, that's true. They missed some.
We're really hard on Drive. I don't hate Drive. I like a lot of things about Drive. Just not the things that I'm supposed to like about Drive.
Yeah, I think that, like, again, like, that's it. I don't like, I'm so mad at Drive. But you bring up, we hate the same things.
It's just that there are also things that I like.
Yeah, which, you know.
That are not things that I was supposed to pay attention to in the long term.
Which, you know, hey. Well, here's the
like, thing. The fact that I'm definitely sure within those 6 months after the global freeze, Kiriko and Rina made out at some point.
I'm down. Like, I think.
I'm pretty sure that happened.
They didn't say it didn't.
I mean, the way they acted with each other in early episodes, there's a bond there.
Yep.
And I mean, yeah, okay, girl friendship bond, that's nice, but I want lesbians.
Yeah. Look, because the thing is, in that whole show, there's no dudes I'd ship together. All the dudes in Drive are trash.
They're, There are a lot of people that, like, ship Go and Chase, and I am not okay with that. Like, listen, I'm generally aboard the camp of ship what you want, but he wanted to murder that guy.
I'm
800% uncomfortable with that.
Ship what you want to ship. I ain't gonna stop, but I will judge.
I'm generally not okay. I'm generally not comfortable with ships in which one party has tried to murder the other.
On multiple occasions. Like, this is not a one-off thing.
I mean, like, that was Go's entire motivation for a long time.
And I mean, like the closest thing I could think of where I've seen it work, except I haven't actually seen it, but I've heard third hand that it really works, would be like, the end of the Hannibal TV show.
That's canon, I think.
Yeah, it is. It's
100% canon. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I follow someone who's really into Hannibal, but I'm...
Me too.
Things make me uncomfortable.
No,
I don't...
Given the issues of yours I know you have, I do not think you should watch Hannibal.
So, I mean, I try to avoid the Hannibal posts as much as I can. Yeah. I mean, like... I am a sucker for a good, like, villain hero ship, but it's got to be done certain ways.
Yeah, and
especially involving that villain being redeemable on any level,
or
which
just actually
Go
managing to just fully bring the hero over.
Yeah, I mean, like
someone's got to give, is the thing.
Like, there's got to be. So they have to like each other to some degree, even if they're fighting.
Yeah, they have to be like fascinated at least.
Like I've got my kind of villain hero Go Andra thing and my villain hero Kyoryuger thing, which is like the only Kyoryuger thing I was even slightly invested in. But like those were things they were legitimately trying to set up. Within the shows. I mean, show I call was the only one on Go Andra trying to set that up, so it never happened again.
Was he on Go Andra?
Yeah. He did a handful. He wasn't the lead on Go Andra. He just did a handful of episodes.
I would have noticed that, because...
But he did episode 14, which was the Kegelesia and Haunt in the Woods. Which was definitely a whole attempt to start something with the two of them that never went anywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I'm a sucker for that, but they have to like each other to some degree.
Yeah.
Or in the case of Abaranger, they have to literally be married beforehand, and one of them is brainwashed.
Yeah, I just, like, Chase Go, I do not see it unless it's just the thing where I've been told Go is allegedly very attractive. I do not see it.
I've
been told.
I don't know.
And I'm,
but,
I
mean, like, it's, I forget what the context of this was.
Yeah, let's just get back to the thing.
Let's move on because I don't remember where that was going.
Heck with Drive. Right. Oh, that's right. Generally, do you have any comments for us regarding Ghost? To which Supaida answered, I think Makoto has done some bad things to get those icons. He's most likely been working with this royal family to get the powers and information to hunt icons. Maybe Sage is similar to them, or directly related by blood. Ghost blood.
I'm definitely confused as to how ghost families work.
Yeah.
Like, how can you be born into a family of dead people? Or are there just beings that exist in ghost worlds?
Well, I'm thinking maybe, like, the Ganma are not exactly... Like, maybe they're not actually the dead. Maybe they're things...
They're just things that exist in that world where dead people go.
Yeah, where the dead are their natural resources. And that's why they're coming here.
I mean, again, like I was saying that when we first started regarding this, like, when I was reading Bleach, that was always a thing that was very confusing, because people have, like, siblings and parents and, like, age and grow up. Huh. And I'm like, I don't quite understand this.
What is the point of that? You are dead. You are not alive.
I'm like, this is a world full of dead people, so I don't understand how this works. It's absolutely fascinating and is the basis for some of my favorite characters, but I don't quite understand it from a logistics standpoint.
Hmm. Now, Jason commented. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. I'm stepping all over you. Do you want to take this one, or shall I?
No, if you want to do it.
Jason said, these two episodes were a solid lead into the finale of this first arc. They helped flesh out the backstory and teased at mysteries to be solved later in the show. Definitely looking forward to whatever the end of the Icon Hunt has in store for us. I have some questions for you, but ignore them if they have already answered. Or if there are too many, and we did answer those earlier, Jason. You probably heard.
Unless that gets shoved after all of this, in editing.
Yeah.
Who knows how this will all be edited together, but we do answer all of those questions, which you may or may not have heard at this point. Stargear commented, Kamen Rider Ghost is such an amazing show, and to think it's only 10 episodes in. That's something. Yeah. That is something we have been discussing.
Yeah, this is 10 episodes. Go on.
It has delivered so much and promises so much more, and I can't wait to see how all of this unfolds. I've not been this eager for anything in a while, and it's just astounding how much they've already done in such a short time. We have established characters, established backstories, established rules and guides of the world and it is built and that it follows well. And everyone is so intertwined that I couldn't imagine the show or see the show without anyone. Everyone has a purpose. It's been so long since Kamen Rider has been this on point. Since Forze, really. Its only problem is seemingly its lack of female heroes represented by the Icon spirits, which I do think is something that's coming.
I know there's going to be a Florence Nightingale one, which...
And if judging by the two sets of casts dressed up, I believe there would also be a Joan of Arc.
Ooh, nice.
Because there's a shot of the Ghost and Drive casts dressed as a bunch of historical figures. Kiriko is Florence Nightingale, and Akari is Joan of Arc.
That's appropriate.
So I do think there are a small handful of them. I feel like there's at least four. I could be wrong on that.
I mean, if they want to bring in more, I wouldn't say no, naturally, but...
I wouldn't argue. I'm hoping there's not less.
Yeah.
But I feel like... Because I know I've looked at a list of all of them at some point, and I feel like four is what I saw.
Nice.
Stargear also responded to this episode's pre-show post, at which Amit asked at the bottom... thoughts he shared on 9 and 10, and Stargear is responding directly to that on the current thesis of the show. They believe that Amit is definitely right, though I don't believe science versus faith portion is entirely over and solved. I have a feeling that it may get more twisted in a sense, and that this Ganma royal family may take it to another level in a way. I'm not entirely sure how, but I just feel like they may take that divide and use it to their advantage somehow. It feels so good to care about a show again as much as I do about Ghost, and God, I am with you
I
on
know.
That.
Yeah. Although, like,
I do agree with that, though, because, I mean, they do have Alan building these monoliths, which is clearly a very technological thing.
Very.
In the way that it was shown. So I do feel like that's something that the Ganma royal family is playing with, and that I don't think that divide is going to be widened. I think it's going to get knit together.
Yeah, I think so too, because like, I think, especially since, as we were talking about back in the Newton thing, you know, there was a point in time where science and faith were, you know, these were not separate spheres. These were how you understand the universe. It's just that eventually we decided that there was no spiritual universe that we could explore, so we just stopped looking at it. In this series, there is a spiritual universe to be explored that is... knowable, it is explicable, it is studyable. All you need is
Akari.
Several
people have gone there.
What's that?
Several people have gone there.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and come back, and they have opinions about it. Like, you know.
So it's definitely, I feel that gap is going to be closed, if anything.
Yeah. If there is any gap, it will be one that disappears by the end of the series, because otherwise, what's the point?
Yeah.
And yeah, it is so lovely to just, like, be watching Kamen Rider and like, be as engaged as I was, you know, Kuga Forza time. Like,
it feels nice to want to watch the episodes instead of just watching the episodes to do this show.
Yes. Boy, around the end of Drive, I was just like, I gotta do the show.
Oh god, no, I was literally watching them, like, the night before, at the last minute. Like, we'd be doing, like, two or three episodes at a time, and I would just watch all of those episodes the night before the show.
Yep. And finally, Swirly Jiffy said, I'm glad that the action and the plot picked up in this episode, because I was dangerously close to not continuing to watch Ghost. It hasn't been a bad show, but it was just missing a certain oomph that made me really like it. All I can hope for is that we give up the important side characters more to do than the wacky side bits. And, like, I have to agree, like, I was very happy, especially in 10, to see that the two apprentices were important.
Yeah, no, I really loved seeing Narita and Shibuya.
Thank you.
getting to actually have a purpose in an episode instead of to just be there. I mean, if Ghost isn't working for you, then it's not working for you. Not everything is for everyone. I really feel like Akari has been doing a lot.
Yeah, she has. It's been great.
Yeah, it has. And like I said, like, if anyone's going to get the short end of the stick, I'm just glad it's not her.
Hmm. Yeah. Like, look, I like Onari. Like, I'm sad that he has to do so much screaming, but he hasn't done that in a while, and that's lovely.
Yeah, no, he has calmed down. I'm hoping it's a wagon sort of situation where he got all of that out of the way in the beginning, and now we're going to actually use him properly.
Yeah, but, like, Akari is just stepping up to the plate. It's great.
It is.
And with that, I think that brings our coverage of Kamen Rider Ghost episodes 9 and 10 to a close. So for Uncommon Cast RX, I'm Aleph.
And I'm Sono.
We'll catch you next time.
Yes.
You can reach us through the show's inbox, uncommoncastrx@gmail.com, or interact individually with us on Twitter. I run at uncommoncastrx, also at Trial of Heroes. Aleph is at NeedsMore Aleph, and Sono is at Mama Fry's Meal or at SonoYourFix. You can keep track of what we're doing by checking out our Tumblr, uncommonrx.tumblr.com, or by following us on our website, trialofheroes.wordpress.com. The Uncommon Cast RX is part of the TOLL Network, bringing you analysis with teeth.